Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap for the 24th of Blogist. He's Relo T. I'm my ruler of time. And we've got something finished recently that we're going to be talking about. But yes. I don't know. I guess we tell until we get into that. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good, Nick. Did I tell you, by the way, that I recently found somebody?
I don't think you did.
A very special significant other. Would you like to meet her?
Okay.
I have her right back here. Now, some would say our relationship is a little bit unorthodox. But I think she's kind of perfect for me. It's Nami, Nick. I'm getting together with Nami. So, you know, don't be jealous just because, you know, your girlfriend is behind you at all times, lifting her shirt up provocatively.
Mm-hmm. I foresee potential obstacles to your relationship, but I am sure that, you know, because I know you, man. You're a strong and resourceful person, and Nami's a strong and resourceful person. I'm sure that your love can endure overcome.
There are difficulties to a relationship that must be overcome. Like, her head can very easily come off, and I feel like that's an issue. But, you know, once you get by that, and the fact that everyone judges me for having it, I think it's going to be a dream match in heaven. I should note, I didn't purchase this, by the way. This was actually given to me.
I was going to ask you, where did this come from? Yeah.
You know, Brennan, who did the Bleach Christmas pod, he played Young You in the Bleach Christmas pod. He went to
kept on saying Caesaro, though it made no sense for him to say that.
He basically picked this up while he was at a convention,
and he thought of you.
Yes, he did. So thank you, Brennan. It's a great gift. It will forever be displayed back here, or at least this week, and I'll probably forget next week. I don't know.
You're just gonna like find it half buried in your dumpster,
along with like a bunch of other incriminating photos.
They must never know.
Somehow I buried my browser my browser history with it.
It's like the physical embodiment of his search history. What the hell? All right, guys. Before we actually move on, I have something I kind of want to talk a little bit about.
Okay.
I've been watching Stranger Things on Netflix.
I did as well.
I saw that you finished it recently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only, like, halfway through the series.
Okay.
And I'm liking it so far. I like the, you know, throwback feel of it, the references to, you know, the classics from the time period it takes place in and stuff. But the one thing that's, like, stuck with me the most is how annoying I found Winona Ryder's character. It's such a mean thing for me to say, because for those of you who don't know, and without giving anything away, most of the series is built around Winona Ryder's character. I think Joyce is her character's name.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Her son has gone missing, and it turns out that there are supernatural and science fiction-y things behind his disappearance. But all that anyone knows is that he's missing, and she is completely distraught over this. And she keeps on thinking that she sees signs of where her son could be, which turn out to be more accurate than you would first suspect, because she comes off as completely hysterical. Understandably, because she's panicking and she's in a really hard situation, so some people aren't taking what she thinks when she says crazy things at face value. The thing is, Winona Ryder's really good at crying, apparently. Because she just, like, everything she says is a sob. It's crazy.
It's very hysteric. God, thank God they found someone at least as good as her. Because if you had handed that role to anyone with less talent, it would be the most cringy, awful thing you'd ever see. Because there are moments, even for as good as Winona Ryder is, there are some moments that I found watching Stranger Things, so I was like, this is a little ridiculous even for her. Like, I can't even fathom if they had just pulled some Lifetime actress off of it and just like, you go in there, do this. Your son's gone. Yeah, cry a lot. Cry into these Christmas lights.
She sounds like Miss Piggy sometimes. Like, honestly, because she's going, my son is missing, and I can't find him, and I know that he's somewhere around here. And then she switches to when she gets mad. Like, she goes into where she works and she needs to buy some stuff for one of these crazy plans that she thinks is going to help her find him. And she gets really serious and angry with the guy. And it's like, looks like you're a frog. You're going to give me an advance on my raise, on my bonus right now.
So you're saying the only way
I swear. She's like, drama Miss Piggy.
The only way we could improve Stranger Things is if we just start adding Muppets into the cast.
Exactly.
I can dig this. Like, Gonzo in as L. Yeah, I can have
like one of the Martians be L. Yep. Nope.
And just every so often, that's explode. Like, oh, whoa. which thing should I not be responding to? They would make two different noises.
Are there bad men after you? Yep. Dude, you don't want to tell an adult? Nope.
I think that still may be my favorite cosplay I've ever seen, that one MAGFest where they were just like two of them walking around.
And then I started a yes chant with the crowd. Legendary moment that the guy's friend immortalized on YouTube. Anyway, getting away from Stranger Things, the time has come, the Kubo said, to talk of many things. Not of Haribel or Yachiru or even the Soul King, but it's the last chapter of Bleach. Bleach is over. The last chapter came out this week. We're going to talk about it now. It was bad.
It's a controversial chapter. That's the nice way to put it.
Well, it was always going to be controversial, because you're talking about the conclusions for these characters that some people have been following for literally 15 years. I myself have been following the series for just over a decade at this point. And so if people are attached to these characters, as that would imply, then there were always going to be some people who would be upset with any conclusion that they got. That said, I honestly think that this, just in terms of, like, big manga endings, it's just a really bad example of one.
There's a lot that's wrong with it, but I think...
Let's get into it.
Kind of had to get into it, yeah.
We open with a pair of eyes attached to a person's face, obviously. Well, although with Yubak, you never know.
Yeah. Now, it is worth noting, this is the only color page of the chapter itself. I mean, there's a color spread, but this is the only color page. And it's devoted like 80% to eyes.
It's just this.
Yeah.
It's this orange-haired kid, the big old round eyes, who's just staring at something. And then Hiyori comes in. Apparently he was snooping around, or she, it's a girl, I forget that. Apparently she was snooping around the Vizard's hideout. So Hiyori comes in and is like, what are you doing here? And then they run off.
Wait, Ichigo's kid's a girl?
With a name like Ichika? I think it's a girl.
Is it? I mean, maybe I didn't pay enough attention.
Could be a guy, I guess. I don't know.
No, Ichika's the Rukia's kid. He's Kazui.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Was Kazui, right. Is it? Yeah. It's a girl, isn't it?
I assumed it was a boy. Didn't they say my son?
I don't know. You can tell how much I care about this character. We then get our big two-page spread, which is a bunch of grown-up Bleach characters, most of them wearing this kind of white uniform. I guess not, a uniform's not a good thing to say. It sort of looks like a uniform, but they're all just wearing different kinds of white casual clothing, and a lot of them have this red and blue band, similar to the Bleach logo on them, and only Ichigo is wearing black, because he's the main character.
He's the special one.
Yeah. Which makes you wonder why Rukia isn't black, or whatever. Or Renji. So then we cut to where we actually were at the end of the last chapter, because everyone in the Soul Society was reacting to Yubak's Ryatsu suddenly reappearing after 10 years. And Byakuya is rushing towards the scene. Soifan quickly joins him. And Soifun brings up, the Squad 13 captain left right after the ceremony, so I sent you out, but, you know, and Becca says, no, it's fine, you don't need to contact them, I'll handle this. Ruki and Renji haven't had time off in a while, so I'll just take care of this. How nice of him, the potentially the greatest foe that Soul Society has ever faced. No, we don't have to call him back from vacation.
We want to watch pay-per-view.
There's a way more important battle coming up. So, Mayuri's already at the scene. Apparently, he got the info earlier than the rest of them, which makes sense. The 12th Division had been monitoring it. So, they arrive there, and Mayuri says, I don't remember actually passing any information on to you guys. And Soifun says, don't underestimate the secret police's intelligence network. Ah, yes. The secret police, the thing that she heads that has had such an impact on the series, yes.
I just want you to know.
They did hunt down Hitsugaya in that one movie. So a bunch of Yubak's power seems to suddenly well up in the area that they're looking over. A giant black ring with some of his eyes sticking out of it. But meanwhile, back in Karakura Town, Ruki and Renji arrive at the Kurosaki Clinic, where they're greeted by Ichigo. And Ichigo, they have a bit of a banter, where Rukia says, it looks like you still have a pretty unpopular place here. And Ichigo says, well, it's an emergency hospital, so it's a good thing that it's not busy. He has a point.
Yeah.
But Ruki also has a point. How are you going to make any money? Now, here's the first problem I see with the chapter. The first big problem. We never see a Shin in this chapter, but it is established that the Kurosaki Clinic is still running. Does that mean Ichigo took it over?
Yeah, it's something that isn't actually directly addressed within the chapter, but you have to assume he did, because they mention also that... Well, actually, no. I thought they're... Yeah, no, I don't even think that's really confirmed, because I was going to say Kazui stays there, but no, it's just... Them saying Kazui goes to Ichigo's room a lot, and Ichigo saying, but that's your room now, Yuzu. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they actually directly say that.
Right, so is he actually, is he staying there? Is he living separately? If it's not Ishin and it's not Ichigo, is it Karin or Yuzu? See, and this relates to an overall problem. Of the people who gather at Ichigo's place, we of course know about Ruki and Renji, because the last chapter established for them. And then we find out about Ishida and, of all people, Chad. But literally, other than who hooked up with who, we don't know anything about any of the other characters.
Mm.
What happened with them at all? What futures they went on to have? What lives they've been leading for the last 10 years? Which prompts me to ask, then, was there even a point to having the time skip other than they had babies? So... anyway, there was also something I wanted to note. They actually edited the 2-page spread for the English version of Jump. You see how Tatsuki is, reacting angrily to something? That's because in the original version, which I guess they edited it because there was like a huge banner across the top that was all in Japanese and stuff, so they didn't want to have to edit all that. You could see Keigo like pouncing towards her with his lips puckered.
Which seems to
imply that they're in a relationship, which is a little bit of a shocker.
That's
because the only previous relationship they had was her being annoyed by him and punching him.
Yeah, that's an odd pairing.
I guess they and Mizuhiro hung out a lot when it was just them left out of Ichigo's group of friends that weren't going on adventures with him. But it does just kind of come out of nowhere. Whatever. That's probably the least controversial pairing that we find out about in this chapter. So, Karin and Yuzu show up after Keigo and Tatsuki and Mizuhiro, they're like gathered around the TV greeting
it
them.
It took me like 3 readings of it, by the way, to realize that's Tatsuki.
Because
now that like, she doesn't have the same hair and the way Kubo's art has gotten, she looks identical to like 20 other people.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it surprise me if you were supposed to go, oh, that's Karin.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's what I thought at first. I was like, oh, it's Corinne. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe it's Rukia, a different panel?
No,
I was
wait.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah. So, they're gathered on the TV. Yuzu and Karin show up. When this chapter came out, many people noted that Karin had boobs now. Which, I guess the first thing you can say is, well, she got older, that's fine. But then she leans over the couch so that her boobs just kind of drape over it. And you go, no, Kubo paid a little bit of special attention to that. He did. Everyone greets Rukia. And then suddenly on the TV we hear, Wihans presents the WBO World Heavyweight title match. Let's take a look at some highlights of the challenger Yasutora Sato's previous fights.
Yasutora Sato, Nick, who's that?
So Chad is now challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship in boxing. This actually makes me very angry.
This is a very ill-fitting conclusion for Chad's character. It makes sense only in the sense of he was really good at punching. So
punches.
Yeah,
he's big.
He could be a boxer. But that actually goes against what Chad's character core was, which was the fact that he was born extremely big and extremely strong. And he used to beat up kids who made fun of him for it. And his grandfather sat him down and was like, you shouldn't use these gifts to hurt people. Be kind, Chad. Be kinder than anyone else and use these gifts to protect them. So his whole
thing... I'm actually going to read off an exact quote. This is from the dub of the anime.
Okay.
This is from Chad remembering that and then his monologue when he first unleashed his powers. I know, abuelo. I know my hands weren't made for me to hurt others. They were made to protect me and defend others from evil in this world. I learned my lesson and will never abuse the gift I have been given. Unless I'm going to punch people and give them concussions for money.
That, yeah, I forgot that last bit was in there. Never mind, this all makes sense.
Wait, they'll pay you how much to kill people with your bare hands? Go for it, Chad.
But that's the kind of thing that's a bit disappointing about this. I mean, beyond the fact that he doesn't even look like Chad anymore, he looks like he's suddenly become Shunsui's
brother. He looks like Shunsui. Yeah.
But beyond that, it's just the idea that I can understand this notion in a very superficial sense of Chad, and it's kind of interesting that of all the cast, Chad is far and away the most famous and kind of successful of the
characters. It's almost a joke on his irrelevance at the end of the series.
It is.
Who would have thought Chad would be the most famous out of all of us? Yeah, who would have thought?
But it's something where you're just like, there are other ways I feel like they could have, you know, Kubo could have adhered to, essentially, to what Chad was all about. Because you figure, somebody like him who's all about being kinder than anybody else, why doesn't he have some kind of humanitarian job?
Like, or what, if he wants to protect people... What if he becomes a police officer?
A firefighter. Something that would use his physicality in a way that helps people, you know?
A bodyguard.
Something like that. Like, and maybe there's more details here than we're, you know, being given. Maybe it's like, I fight for a fucking orphanage in Mexico or something. I don't know.
Every tooth that Yasutora Sato's opponents lose, $1,000 gets donated to charity.
It was just one of those things you look at and you're like, ah, oh, that's a little disappointing because this isn't what you'd kind of expect for Chad's character. But to be completely honest, I really don't think Kubo knew where to go with Chad after essentially like the Soul Society or even before that. He really kind of was always spinning in place when it came to Chad. So this kind of ending, it almost feels par for the course where it's just like, sure, whatever.
Well, you know, you want to add a cherry on top to this. You know what character... would have been appropriate for this conclusion. You know, maybe a character who had an established history of competing in fighting sports and, in fact, was established to be incredibly dominant at it and nearly won the high school women's championship for all of Japan with a broken frickin' arm. Maybe Tatsuki could have finally done something. Huh? I need to think of that. No, she's married to Keigo for some reason. Like, it's not... This is the thing that really bugs me about this chapter, is it's not all the unanswered questions, because as soon as it was announced... Not even before it was announced, okay, Bleach is going to be ending sooner than normal, We knew there were going to be questions we were never going to get the answers to. We knew that there were going to be some threads that were never going to be tied back in to the plot of the series. Certain explanations we were never going to hear. But the stuff that we do get in this chapter, instead of any of that, is stupid and misled, it seems. The fact that we've got Chad fulfilling this role that another character would have been suited for. The fact that all that we find out about for pretty much any of the rest of the cast is who got married to who and who had kids with who. Which is for two pairings, and that's it. And then we get Aizen waxing philosophical in a way that, again, contradicts stuff that we learned. Oh my god, it's so terrible.
There's a lot that's really kind of skipped over. And I'll be honest, when I think my main... I shouldn't say my main. There's actually a couple different issues I have with this chapter. But I think one of them is really just a feeling of a lack of heart in this final chapter. You know, it's deliberately a chapter about Ichigo and his friends at the conclusion. There are Soul Reapers present, but, you know, Ruki and Renji are the only ones who are actually relevant to this conclusion. They're there because they're part of Ichigo's main cast of friends. So it's fitting that Bleach should end with these characters. But there is no heart to it. And one of the biggest things is the fact that, you know, this group of, what, the five people, Chad, Ryu, Ichigo, Orihime, and Rukia, I guess you could say like the five-man band or whatever, throw Renji in there somewhere. Of those characters, two of them aren't there. Chad's not there because he's off fighting. And they're all watching his fight, which is kind of a bummer because you're like, if it's Chad and they're all so good friends still, why didn't he invite them to ringside? And I understand this easy logic you could work around. Like, he didn't have enough tickets. They didn't want to bring the kids. You didn't need to explain that. But it's like, not only that, Ryu doesn't get to be there either. He's too busy as a doctor. And I get it. He's watching the phone on his phone with them in spirit. But it's like, Ryu can't even be there to interact with the rest of the cast in the final chapter of the series. We're never going to see these characters again, most likely. He doesn't get to be there to say anything to any of them. There's no closure on that angle to the point. And this is actually, I think, what bothered me the most about this chapter, even more than what they did with Chad. Ryu doesn't even get to face the reader in the title card at the start of the issue. You just see the back of his head. I was like, he couldn't give a little bit more to that? Like, it's just, it's so impersonal, the chapter, in that way. There's no real conversation between characters.
I like how they also established, like, where is Dr. Ishida? Well, he is taking an extended break. He wasn't able to take the same day off as his friends, so he's watching something he was supposed to watch with them. They're like, oh, that's so cute. Wait a minute, if he was just going to take time off to watch it anyway, why didn't he just take a short day and go there?
Yeah, why didn't he just leave?
Like, he's got super speed from being a Quincy. He could have made it in time. He could if he's going to literally stop working in order to watch the whole fight and then come back, just run off with your super speed. I forget what it's called because I've stopped cramming for Bleach, so I forget all the things.
It's all
again.
Gone. The Bleach
content. It's all gone. Out in one ear, out the other. What's a Hado spell? Anyway, so he could run off there, say, hi guys, hey, okay, let's relax. Oh god, Karin, your boobs are huge. Jesus.
Get those out of here.
I hope Chad scores a one-round knockout so I don't have to breathe your scummy Soul Reaper air anymore and then run back off again. I don't know. So, but, I mean, the only other thing that they establish is, oh, Ishida works at the hospital. He's a doctor again. He actually followed in his father's footsteps for his career.
And I like this, actually. This actually is a good touch, because it was something established early on with Ryu that he never wanted to be a doctor, because he saw his father operating on his mother, and he's like, I could never do a job where I had to cut apart somebody I loved. And as we found out from the end of the series, what Ryu's dad was doing at the time was actually extracting that arrowhead that Ryu used to help kill Uobach. It was a vital thing. It was not something he necessarily did completely out of a passionless exercise. And it also shows that over these 10 years or whatever, Ryu's matured. And this was exactly, for somebody who had such precision with his hands, you know, being somebody who's skilled with sewing, I feel like this is a great profession for him, very smart guy. So this is the right career choice for Ryu. So this is a change I like. I just wish he could have been there with the other characters to say something.
Yeah, it's, he feels like the only character in this sequence to get any form of real closure to his character, because this implies that the tense relationship he had with his father might have also gotten some resolution to.
Yes.
So, in the limited time they had to tell the conclusion to all these characters, because this is only a 19-page chapter. This isn't like when Naruto ended and he got, like, 38 pages or anything like that. This is a regular length, essentially, for a chapter. I think maybe a page or two more beyond that, but it's not, like, a long one. So this is essentially a great use of real estate that in about three or so panels he's able to say, hey, here's what happened to Uryu.
Orihime comes in. Ichigo asks her where Kazui is. Yeah, it is a guy. I don't know. Orihime indicates, oh, that he was actually just over where at Hiyori's place. Apparently she uses her Shinrika to actually monitor their kid. It's the most use they've gotten in a while. I forget the last time she even ever said any of their names. Jesus Christ, Tsubaki gets a name drop in the last chapter.
I don't know why. I read that as Tatsuki. I was like, why did Tatsuki know?
And Tatsuki is just like, this is how I spend my time.
I follow children around. Anything to get away from my boyfriend.
There's a weird little joke between Yuzu and Karin, because Yuzu says, oh, well, Kazu's probably in your room, Ichigo. And Ichigo's like, well, yeah, it's your room now, though. Are you okay with him being there? And Yuzu's like, oh, yeah, of course I'm fine with him. Karin's like, oh, yeah, that's because Kazu looks just like Ichigo.
I've heard a mixture of thoughts on this one. I choose to go with the idea that Karin's just embarrassed because she's such a, like, she still has a little bit of when she was a little kid in spirit, and anytime she tried to go into Ichigo's room, he kicked her out of it. Yeah, and he always kicked her out of his room. Mm-hmm. And then she also has all the matronly stuff from, you know, their mother, so she also, I guess, kind of sees this like, oh, I'm taking care of, like, a baby version of my little brother.
Mm.
I'm trying not to think of it as an incest reference.
Well, in the first chapter, Yuzu did bemoan the fact that they didn't take baths anymore when she's 11 years old, so... Rukia, Ichigo says, I thought you guys were bringing your kid to Renji and Rukia. And Rukia says, well, she's a court guard cadet now. So she was given a travel permit for the summer, and she is like, yeah, come on in. And then she looks around the corner. Looks like she's gone.
Whoops.
It's like, I do like how she's just, like, not worried in the slightest, like, because Ichigo says, well, where's your kid? Ah, she's a soul reaper. There's no human that could possibly pose a threat to her. She'll be fine. Honestly, Rukia is, like, the big bright spot, I think, in this chapter, the fact that she's happy with the way things are, and she's got that bit of goofiness that she had in her character in lighter moments of the series. I've really have missed that in the last few years of Bleach, where I think that the lightest thing that came to her character was Kirinji checking out her ass. So,
yeah.
Anyway, we cut to Ichigo / Yuzu's room, and a little hole of darkness appears, and U-Box Ryatsu starts gushing out of it. And meanwhile, back in Soul Society, all the Soul Reapers are reacting to it, and Psychopath Kazui just goes,
fuck your shit!
And plugs the hole part of the way, and suddenly U-Box power just explodes and vanishes. I guess this means that it reacted with the bit of Yuhibak that was in Ichigo, which was then passed on to Kazui? I guess?
I'm not sure. This is another thing that I tried to, like, kind of look
why
up.
Why did it rise back up to begin with? Was it Yuhibak, you know, after so and so many years, his power and so on will be regained? What happened? Did Kazui absorb Yuhibak's power? What happened? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not even going to try to get into the different theories I heard, because none of them really seem to make a whole lot of sense.
So, cut to Aizen, who seems to be back in prison again, tied in his chair, and he says, "Ah, the last of Yubok's power is finally gone." And he flashes back to when Ichigo struck the final blow against Yubok. And so Yubok monologued, "The path has been sealed, Ichigo. The path to a world without fear. The living world, the soul society, Hueco Mundo, they all should have become one. Life and death were meant to be combined as one, but that can no longer be, thanks to you, Ichigo. How disappointing. Because of you, life and death will retain their shapes. All that has life will continue to live in constant fear of death now. Forever." And so now we know what Yuhabok's goal is, I guess.
Yeah, thinking back on it, I guess I never really realized exactly what his end goal was, and from this, it's essentially that he wanted to erase death from the world, which I can understand in a small way, because even though he was, what, 9,000 years old or something like that, he still was presumed to have a finite lifespan in a way, so maybe it was something that he himself was trying to overcome in some fashion.
Or maybe he wanted to share the ability. Well, but then, if he wanted everyone to be able to live on forever, then why did he so callously kill all his followers to take their powers back?
Because they were all fucking weirdos.
Only the normal people will live forever.
Grimmy's like, "You forgot me, master!" Like, "No, no, you're not normal. You're a brain in a jaw."
Why did I do that again? I don't know. So Aizen now monologues, giving his response to literally no one.
It's like fucking...
This isn't him thinking. He's speaking aloud to nobody else in the room.
It's like the end of a Scrubs episode, and that little music comes in, and JD gives his thoughts on the episode's wrap-up, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Fear certainly would not have existed in the world you wished for. But nor without the fear of death, people will not search for hope.
It's like, what is this? It's so weird. It's like, I actually do get this, because it's an entire little speech about how death is something not to be feared, but it's an inevitable part of life, and how courage is what helps us continue on without it. And it's being spoken to us by the person who is now immortal. And you get the sense that Aizen, having now attained his immortality, is maybe a little bit regretful of that, and kind of sees the benefit that death can give, and note that he'll never retain it. Or attain it, rather. And he's forever going to be stuck in that chair in the prison. So I get it.
I get that, and I get that, you know, he has changed his mind, and maybe in the end, this might have been his real reason for opposing Yuhabok. Mm-hmm. Although that would imply that he knew about Yuhabok's actual goal. I don't know. Well, I guess... I mean, the Thousand Year Blood War arc had to be fought over something. They said that it was because of Hollows.
That was, yeah, wasn't it? Just because of the Hollow imbalance.
Right. Well, they said that the original war was fought because the Quincy's wanted to destroy Hollows and the Soul Reapers wanted to maintain balance. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they actually, I don't know, maybe they at some point found out about Yuhawk's plan and he's repeating it, and maybe Aizen knew about it originally. But although this does actually make sense, the fact that, oh, the Quincy's actually kept on trying to destroy the Hollows, not because they wanted to have vengeance against them, but because their leader was specifically trying to disrupt the balance and actually change the world. Okay. Anyway, yeah, Aizen goes on this monologue, like you said, about how, yes, there is a cycle of life, but humans live in fear of death, and because of that, they can then become courageous, and because of that, humanity can advance and move forward. That fear of death is actually something very important that keeps people going. You need to have that balance between them and the world.
Which is a good sentiment. I like this statement. I mean, I'll be honest, despite the fact that it dealt with the afterlife, I really don't feel like Bleach thought too heavily on themes of death, per se.
Mm-hmm.
They were there, definitely, but I think there were other areas that struck more than that. But I can get behind his speech. I think it's a good statement. It's a good, nice kind of thought to at least end Bleach on. The issue I have, it isn't with Aizen speaking it, though. It's that Ichigo, in this final chapter, says nothing of importance.
No,
I have a list of the lines he says.
Hi, Rukia, come in. Rime, get in here.
Yeah, I have a list. These are the things, essentially, that Ichigo says in the final chapter of Bleach. Hey, everyone's here. Just shut up and come in. Or Hime, it's starting. Where's Kazui? But it's your room now. Didn't you guys say you were bringing your kid? And that's it. He has nothing of any worth to say. And right before this, there's a monologue that Yuhabak gives about all of his plans. And Ichigo's there and just stares and does nothing the entire time. Which has kind of been all, you know, Ichigo's been doing the past, like, couple months. He just kind of stares in response to things. And it's just, it's disappointing because you'd want something out of the final chapter for him. Some line, some moment that shows some closure for the most important character of the series.
Allegedly. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, really, it comes down to the idea that this is supposed to be a closing chapter for Ichigo and his friends, and there's nothing of any real worth for Ichigo to say or do in this chapter. It's just kind of the idea that he had a kid, and that's what's great. You know, I'm happy that his character seems to be happy, but, like, there's no sense of closure in anything. Like, there's no wrap-up. Is Ichigo still out there hunting hollows to protect Karakura Town? Is he still even using Soul Reaper powers? Like, there's just nothing to, like, how have these events shaped Ichigo? There was at one point in time a discussion, since we had with the earphones kid, I forget his name, but how he specifically mentioned Ichigo might never be able to return to your world because...
Mizuhiro.
Yeah, because he might become too powerful to even exist in this, you know, this plane. You know, he could become
and now he
so
has,
powerful.
He has killed the most powerful opponent that the series could possibly offer. He, at one point, before Yubak seemingly took his powers back, had the powers of literally every single species in the world. And that combination of powers made him one of the most powerful beings in existence. And now he's just chilling out at home.
Yeah, now he has a dad cut and he has a kid, and that seems to be all he cares about, which is fine. You know, that's a good end to the character, but it's like, there's so much...
How did he get to that point?
Yeah, you know? Like, how did we get to this?
And what is he doing in his life?
Does he have any thought on the idea?
Are we going to get a Bleach the Last movie that explains how he and Orihime hooked up?
How Chad won all of his fights to get to where he is.
Hajime no Chad.
But, like, seriously, like, there's nothing... How does Ichigo react to the concept that he basically killed a god? Like, this is a dude who, as the series went on, became more and more introspective about his opponents, and he has nothing to offer in response to this.
He barely even reacted to, when he was forced to kill the Soul King.
Yeah.
Like, this is what... This entire final run has shown Kubo's shortcomings as a writer and also almost certainly a lack of some sort of motivation. Because clearly he didn't care about Ichigo very much. He had Ichigo do this, you know, reforged Bankai thing, and that played no role in the final battle. He had Yubak be the one responsible indirectly for Ichigo's mother's death, but then Ichigo didn't seem to carry any sort of personal stake in the fight anyway. He had very little to offer in terms of actual opposition to Yubak. He wasn't even, like, the determined one when he was fighting against him. Like, he had to basically be dragged to the final fight by Tsukishima's power and Renji lighting a fire under his ass. People have been saying about Ichigo for a while that he seems to lack his own, like, agency because he's a reactionary hero. He reacts to, you know, someone he cares about being kidnapped or his family around him being hurt or another friend of his getting kidnapped or people that he's grown to, I guess, be friends with. Their society has been attacked. And so then he goes off and takes care of stuff. And I think that we should have probably, from the moment that Ichigo made wanking motions after Isshin told him how his mother died, we should have seen that there was not going to be a satisfactory conclusion for Ichigo's part in this story arc. And there you go.
It's a shame. I think we'll talk a lot more about this next week when we kind of do our retrospective, but I've been starting to reconsider some of my thoughts on Ichigo's character, and I do think there were somewhat more layers than I think I initially thought of, but when it came to the final arc, he really just kind of felt like he was along for the ride, and only was...
For a guy that was desperate in the short arc before, desperate, with seemingly no danger whatsoever present to get his powers back, to help people out, was desperate to get back in the action... He really did not seem to care when shit was going down.
And if he did, he just never said anything. Like, that's really what it comes down to. Like, every time Yuuba talked, it was to monologue against him. Which is great for you and your Yuuba impersonation, but, you know, as actual character motivation.
I shall now tell the audience what I think is going through your mind right now.
Yeah. Fuck, man.
You are experiencing despair. Oh, you are going through some very complicated thoughts, right? It's very interesting what you're thinking right now.
The lyles, Ichigo, like onions.
Teenagers aren't cakes, they're onions.
Zesty salsa dip beside it. Go along with your fried onion mind.
Okay. All right. But there is one last thing that happens.
Yes.
As we get the chapter number 686 entitled Death and Strawberry as a reference to the beginning of the series, Rukian Renji's kid appears and introduces herself as Ichika Aburai, which is a cute little detail. You know, they named their kid after Ichigo, someone who's very important to both them, and as Renji said, helped to bring them back together when they had grown distant from each other.
Although, isn't it strange she took Renji's name as opposed to Rukia's? Since Rukia's from a royal family, essentially.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Small, like, small detail probably could have just been explained they cared more about. Or they didn't care about it. But it is weird because it's like, I mean, I haven't seen Byakuya popping out any kids. This girl might be in line to lead the family.
Yeah. So Ichika says, I'm a Soul Reaper cadet. Who are you? And Kazui says, I'm Kazui Kurosaki. And suddenly darkness bursts around him, and suddenly he's wearing a Soul Reaper cloak and has his Zanpakuto. And I'm a Soul Reaper, too! And right. Ichika goes, huh?
Credits.
That's the last thing that happens in Bleach.
That's the end of Bleach.
The last thing that happens in all Bleach is a character we've just met going, huh?
Oh my god.
Okay. There are, like, about 5 billion different things I want to talk about, but there's only room for so many, obviously. First of all, apparently Kazui can just magically shift between Soul Reaper and human form.
Need a glove or something.
Right, something to project the spirit from the body, and apparently he can just transform for some reason. I guess Ichika and Kazui have never met before. And
they're very busy up in Soul Society. How could they?
Well, and apparently their parents had never told each other about them before. Whatever. I don't care. Another thing I guess that we got to talk about is, the shipping wars actually got laid to rest, which is something that actually surprised me. I honestly was not expecting Kubo to even bring up that. So, yay. Ichigo got together with Orihime, and Rukia got together with Renji. The latter actually surprises me more, because I always saw them more as...
Brother or sister.
Friends and companions. It's not, like, ridiculously out of nowhere, because we knew how close they were, at least. But I'm surprised that they took a romantic direction, even so. I said in previous bits that it's like, oh, I prefer, you know, Ichigo and Rukia Genji because I thought they would be more interesting. But it's like, I don't really care that it happened. I just wish that... I wish that these kids had less of a role in this final chapter. I wish Yuha Bak had less of a role in this final chapter, and the actual main characters we got more from.
I wish three pages hadn't been devoted to Soul Captain or fucking Division Captains running to the source of Yuha Bak's power.
Yeah, as short as this is, and so as little time as there is to do stuff, there was still so much time wasted on unimportant, I don't care about this shit. But the last thing I want to talk about is the fact that last week, of course, people were waiting with bated breath for to hear anything about this chapter. And the spoilers came out for it. And so I think I saw, like, one set of fake spoilers, and I saw actual spoilers. And when I saw the actual spoilers, I literally went, there is no way that this is real. Because it read like someone's Bleach fan fiction. And Chad became a World Heavyweight Championship boxer, and Ruki and Renji's kid meets Ichigo and Orihime's kid, and they're both Cadet Soul Reapers, and... It's like, are you kidding me? That's what happens? And Karin has huge tits now. Like, seriously? Are you fucking kidding me? This is so stupid. This is lame. Like, you could not think of a better conclusion to this manga. Honestly, that has gone on for 15 years and has gained a worldwide following. I have hated Bleach for 5-6 years, and I think that if I still liked it, this would have made me hate it. Like, it's so bad. It's so lazy. It's lazy, is what it is. It's Kubo doing some stupid self-contradicting with the rest of the series philosophy, doing, and then they had kids, because that's how happy endings work. And that's it. It's dumb.
The big issue I have with this chapter, too, is there's no sense of finality to it. You expect that next week, Bleach 2 starring Kazui and Ichika is going to run, because that's the only reason I could feel like to end the series on this note. Because this is a terrible...
Bleach, Ichigo, and the White Winter or something.
Yeah, like, you just expect something to come out, because it's such a weird note to leave the series off on. Bleach ends on an exaggerated reaction between two characters we've just met. And there's no reason for that. I don't want to, like, do the whole comparison thing too much. But I want to just compare this very quickly to the ending of Naruto. The final page of Naruto is a color page. You know, the whole thing was a color, but it was essentially a full page spread showing the Naruto Hokage face on the Hokage Mountain. And that's a very powerful visual to end
Naruto
the series on.
You achieved the goal that he'd had for 700 chapters.
He started Naruto looking at him defacing the statues. We essentially end it looking at his face standing amongst them, seeing that he accomplished his dream. And at the same time, it does tease the future because Boruto has now vandalized all the faces. And it continues to also add that the world is going to grow and continue because we could see a big, sprawling metropolis behind the statues, a new Konoha. So you're able to give yourself a visual that closes out the series and still says, hey, but this world's never going to end. It's still going to keep on living. Adventures will still be had. There's none of that in this chapter. There's no visual outside of maybe the panel of Rukia and Ichigo silently arguing as Aizen speaks over it. Maybe that's the closest thing you can kind of get because that does feel like a quintessential Bleach moment. But it's not as though Kubo's lacked at this before. He's actually done very effective ends to arcs before, where he'll end on a big sprawling view of, like, the Serete or Karakura Town or something like that that gives you a visual to be like, ah, and kind of let you exhale and get closure to something. And there's nothing in this. It ends with an exaggerated joke that makes you think, I guess there'll be a chapter next week. Because otherwise... there's no exhale. It's just kind of like a dead stop, and it's just kind of weird and awkward and unfortunate.
Yeah, and you know, also, you know, Nisekoi, We found out what happened with the rest of the cast. There was a finality to, like, every single character. This is what happened with them. This is what their life is like now. The thing that really separates Naruto from Bleach, not just in terms of the execution, but also in terms of the role that their kids have in being introduced, Naruto, a big thing about it was one generation passes on to the next, and, you know, that's what the Village of Konoha is all about. That's what they fight for. That's what the ninjas are for, is so that they can protect their community and their families, and they may die in battle, but their kids can grow up. A big thing with, you know, Naruto at least being alive around his kid was that, of course, he never had parents growing up. And it's the same thing, like, with Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. A big deal with it was, you know, it had a lame sort of cliche feel to it, but, hey, the people are there for their kids, as opposed to the last big wizarding war. You know, there were all these orphans, all these people who never got to grow up and grow old and see their kids grow up. Bleach, that was never a theme. There were previous generations, to be sure, but the relationship between them and the lineage that passed on between them was never a focus of stuff. We were just told, oh, well, that was that guy's father, or that was that guy's older brother, or whatever. And so to have this much focus be placed on that, it feels out of place for this, because it wasn't earned. Mm-hmm. A lot of this was not earned. It's just thrown out there because this is how shonen mangas are supposed to end, I guess.
Yeah. Huh.
And I think that if you went up to Kubo and say, you didn't care when you wrote this, I don't think that he would disagree with you. Because he's been so pissed off the last few years, apparently. So
I don't want to end this on much of a negative. I do want to kind of end this on at least a bit of a thought of, hey, this is a series that's ran for 15 years that's coming to an end. It's a series that we've been talking about on this podcast since we first started it, and something we were reading far before that even happened. So to that extent, I do want to at least say it's going to be very sad to see Bleach gone, you know, even though it has not been of a great caliber for a while. I do want to kind of say, like, thanks to Kubo Sensei, and, you know, it's going to be something I'm going to miss talking about each week. You know, despite how it ended, it was a fun series to discuss. It's something I'm looking forward to kind of analyzing a lot more in depth next week.
I hope the next thing you write, you're happier with, dude. Like, seriously. Kubo's a very talented artist, and comes with some very imaginative ideas. Mm-hmm. So it's very sad when he's not into what he's doing. So, let's move on to the rest of the recap portion of the manga recap. Let's open up with Black Clover. On to the next adventure, I guess. I think I made the observation in the last... God damn it, you stupid fucking jump. God damn... Won't let me scroll the way I want to. I hate the new reader. I hate it. I made the observation in Black Clover last time that it seems as though it has a very kind of breakneck pace. Like, every time that one thing wraps up, another has to start immediately. And we did get the, you know, okay, well, the fight's over chapter last week. But it feels like they're very much rushing to get to new things. Anyway, so we begin our chapter with everyone in the Black Bulls getting ready to set off and return home and leave the Water Temple behind. All of the priests and a whole bunch of the people who live in the temple are saying goodbye to them. Asta has a little bit of an exchange with Kahono and Kyato, and he tells them, you know, don't give up on your dreams, guys. You know, I'm sure that there will be magic that can you know, heal you and then, you know, continue to follow them. And they're, of course, still optimistic. Kyato says, I'll even dance with this leg. And he's got this, like, artificial leg on his stump. And Kyato uses her psychic powers, I guess, to say, yeah, I won't give up. The Black Bulls return home. Immediately everyone collapses, and is like, ah, so glad to be home. Then everyone looks over and sees Gordon Agrippa, the one character who didn't come along with them.
I felt so bad for this dude.
He's just hunched over in a corner, and they're like, what's with him? Is he depressed? Is he angry at us for not taking him with us? He's mumbling to himself. What? I can't get inside his head. And we just get this narration that says, he seems gloomy as if he's rejecting contact with others. But actually, he's just a lonely guy who wants friends and can't make any.
I'm like, oh my god, I've never related to a character so much in life. Get eyeliner and black lipstick.
Yami then says, okay, I've got to go deliver a report to the Wizard King. Charmy, you're coming. Bring the prisoners. And Charmy's like, will there be food to eat? Sure, why not? And has to sit, and Finrolf is going to go so that he can be Yami's ride. And Asa's like, can I go too? Minty eyes. Back to life as normal. So, Yami's like, why the fuck not? And they all head back to the capital. Yami says, good job, Finral. Okay, pick me back up and we're ready to go.
Yeah, he's like, catch you later.
But Finral thinks, well, I could go for it with Capital Girls. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Stays mad at Yami for about half a second. So Yami heads off with Charmy and Asta, delivers his report to the Wizard King, talks about, we've brought the body of Veto along with some captured minions with us, and also delivers the magic stone that they were sent to retrieve. Then the Wizard King says, you've probably heard that there were a number of casualties among the magic knights who fought at Rakhi. This should help them rest in peace. We have a little bit of a flashback to expound further on when the Wizard King first encountered Yami. So, back when, I guess, he was a captain, the Wizard King got criticism from the other Magic Knight captains for taking on Yami, and they were like, what the hell is he thinking doing that? You know, he's just some foreigner kid. Who is he possibly thinking? But the Wizard King just says, you know, you've become a really excellent captain, Yami. And Yami's like, I'm 27. Why are you dreaming like a kid?
I like this. Yeah. I like this a lot because it does show that it does kind of give a good explanation as to why Yami believes so much in his group. Because the same kind of chance was taken out on him, somebody who seems weird.
He was a troublesome kid, and someone took a chance on him, and he's paying him back for it by doing a good job.
And he pushes his students to do the same. It did make me ashamed of myself when I found out Yami was 28. I thought he'd be like 35. I was like, I have years to become as badass as Yami. No worries about that. And it's like, oh no, if you want to become as badass as Yami, you better start like 4 years ago, buddy. No!
He looks way older than 28, honestly.
Yeah, like that's why I heard 28. I was like, wow.
I guess if you want to look older than you actually are, you got to smoke heavily and have black magic.
Smoke heavily, you say?
Well, it's going to age you the wrong way.
Oh. Are you saying my Captain Crunch e-juice is making me age maturely?
Bayami says, well, if you want to say you're right, then prove it with the results you get from doing things your way. That's something I learned from you, Julius. Like I said earlier, all I did was prove that you were right. And these guys proved that I was right. And he gives Asta a big heavy slap on the shoulder. The physical abuse of the injured Asta continues, and I love it. Yank his headband down. Julius also congratulates us. It's like, oh yeah, you have another big accomplishment. You're one step closer to becoming the Wizard King. And us is like, oh yes, can I have your autograph? Fucking dork. Fucking dorksta. And Yami actually gets pissed off. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll write my autograph on your face. Needlessly cruel, Yami. And probably my favorite little joke from this chapter, suddenly Julius picks up Charmy and he's like, by the way, Yami, is this your daughter?
I love the way he's holding her, like, she's just like this, and she has, like, no expression on her face, and just says, give me something yummy.
He's like a little kid.
I don't know why it made me laugh so much. It's not a character I particularly love, but in this execution, I was like, I got 100% behind it.
It immediately acts like a little kid demanding something good to eat.
It's just particularly like the way it's written, dude. Give me something yummy.
Marx, Julius's father, suddenly appears and says, "The town of Kiten near the border has been the site of skirmishes with the Diamond Kingdom before, but now it's under attack by a diamond unit!" And starts using transmission magic to send footage from the site of the battle, where a huge army from the Diamond Kingdom is there. And everyone is shocked to see this. Marx says that, yeah, the magic knights that were guarding the town have already nearly been wiped out. And Julius says, "Well, this doesn't look like what they usually tend to do. And also, the ones commanding the army are 3 of the 8 Shining Generals." We get a split page to give the 3 of them big close-ups. Don't really get a feel for, like, their personalities, honestly, beyond their expressions. And one of them goes, "Gah-ha-ha-ha!" But I'm sure we'll find out more about them soon. And Asta, of course, goes, "8 Shining Generals? What are those?" And Yami says, "They're basically like the Clover Kingdom's Magic Knight Captains." Mark suddenly reacts to something and says, "It's them! Over the last few years, they've been first on the scene at every national crisis, and their overwhelming success has won them the position of the top brigade, the Golden Dawn!" And oh my god, Chris, Yuno showed up in this chapter.
I didn't know. I was like, who is this guy? Oh, wait a moment. He's been on the cover page of every chapter of this series, so he's stayed in my mind. I know, that's Yakko.
He's there with their captain, and I think it's 2 characters we haven't really seen before.
Yeah, I don't recall those 2 behind him.
Because I'm pretty sure that's not Midora or Hans. Not Midora. What was her name?
Mimosa.
Was it Midora?
Mimosa.
Mimosa, right. I'm pretty sure that's not Mimosa, and that's definitely not Hans.
So. Yeah, no, I think these are new characters. This is an interesting turn of events, slightly. I've heard some people say, like, it's crazy we're moving so quickly in another arc. I don't know if we necessarily are. I think this might be, like, a small little kind of world-building thing, because I don't think there's going to be a... This is my stupid... talking out my ass for the week, that suddenly, like, next week, everyone's gonna be like, "Rebecca's not an important character," right? In my mind, though, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I don't think we're gonna get a prolonged, like, 6-chapter battle back and forth out of this. I think that we're gonna get some hints to the idea that the Golden Dawn is more evil than maybe everyone realizes. Just the idea of the fact that the most evil fucking person on the planet who's behind the, you know, Midnight Sun in some fashion is there at the scene makes me think that maybe something will play into that of helping the maybe diamond troops out, or I don't know, but...
Or maybe, like, they have some sort of prior knowledge of the attack, and so they're going to use this to, like, boost their position.
This is a stunt display, maybe, and he's working with the diamonds. I don't know exactly how it'll be, but I don't think we're actually going to get, like, a protracted long arc out of this. I think this is just something short in between.
Also, you know, Asta gets to see Yuno in action. Maybe we'll get to see that he's advanced.
Yeah, we haven't seen Yuno in...
long time.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Basically, since they fought off...
Capital.
Yeah. So that's basically 2 good arcs. Yeah.
It was a funny chapter, though.
It was an alright chapter. It honestly didn't leave too much of an impact on me beyond, like, that one joke with Charmy I thought was really good. But that's really about all I have to say about it. Just more people talking about how great Asta is. Nick always loves that. But let's move on to Fairy Tale.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get used to this, going straight from one magic battle series to the other.
I'm used to having a longer break before I have to start talking again. Mm. All right. Fairy Tale, chapter 498, Gray versus Invol. I don't even want to comment on the cover page.
Oh my god.
So fetishy that I feel like if you love the gimmick, you've already jerked off to it. If you don't, you were just like, I just need to move on.
You're like, I'm going to go and on, I don't know, r18.jp or whatever.
I was like, there's no subtlety to this. It's just
find all
purity.
Fairy Tale fan artists and,
yeah. So, last time, Invel showed up, and he cast his ice magic, and essentially it froze everyone to ice, with the exception of Gray, who's kind of resistant to it based off of his ice magic. So we start this week with Gray fighting back, using his ice make, and Invel basically saying, like, oh, you use ice make magic? That's
there cool. is a pretty badass moment right at the start of it.
Where it basically Gray makes a giant hammer ice make impact, and Invel just stomps it with his hand. He just grabs it, like, stops the thing right there, and he starts explaining, like, ice make magic, I assume? That would explain your resistance to cold. You can break my ice. Oh, wait, no, sorry. He just shatters it. Like, just shatters the hammer. And Gray's like, you can break my ice by freezing it? And he's like, yes, I am a pure ice wizard. Rather than creating objects from ice, I simply freeze everything. Which, I don't know why. I guess after a series that had god-slaying magic, dragon-slaying magic, demon-slaying magic, just the dude is like, I'm an ice wizard. Just an ice wizard. Just ice. I was like, this feels like a lamer step back. Whatever.
It also is a little bit, because, you know, Gray's last important opponent was another ice mage.
But that was specifically godslaying magic.
Yeah, but his thing was ice, too.
But that's what I mean. Like, godslaying ice magic, as opposed to this guy who's like, I'm just ice magic. Ice. I don't have any special kind of ice magic. Just ice magic.
Was I'm, like, just a really, I'm just a really strong ice mage.
I was like, did we run out of cool things to do with this? It's like a step backwards. I don't know why he's shitting on Gray when Gray's power seems so much cooler in comparison for some reason.
Gray's next opponent is going to be Mr. Freeze.
I'd be on board with that.
I shoot ice, that's what I do.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger version I'm not on board with.
Alright, fine. I shoot ice. That's all I can do. My black, cold heart can't imagine anything more creative.
Of course, if that's a version of him in Fairy Tail, he's going to have some, like, cryogenous fetish thing. I don't know. He has something about, like, freezes girls.
Whenever he freezes a woman, he somehow freezes. He freezes their clothes off.
Yeah, he has that clothes gun. Right. Freezes their clothes off.
And then the second time he freezes them, even if they're, like, in a normal pose or they're like, covering up,
yeah.
Suddenly they turn into, like, a pin-up model statue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, like sculpts them into,
like,
it.
They're doing this when he freezes them, and then all of a sudden they're going, when they're frozen.
Like, I hate this series. Invel basically explains, he's like, you know, your ice magic is a derivative of mine, so I can destroy your creations as easily as if they were children's blocks. So Gray activates his god-slaying, or demon-slaying magic that he got from his father. And you can see it's like this black mark that starts covering all of his arm. And he uses attack that actually is effective against Invel. And Invel's like, oh, demon-slaying magic. But that power comes at a cost. Those who want demons lose their minds in the process. I find that fascinating. So he stops Gray's next attack. And the entire landscape just gets covered in a blizzard. Like, I presume when the magic was that powerful, it completely just froze everything around them. And even Zeref is reacting to this, looking out the window and saying, Invel? Gray notes that it's cold, even cold enough to freeze him. But Invel's like, well, you have the potential to become one of us, but perhaps you've noticed the darkness is seeping into your heart. And Gray's like, what? But I'm not a bad guy. And he's like, darkness is there's no, you know, morality. Darkness is unrelated to the concepts of good and evil. It is a tremendous source of power, one that any human being can possess. And darkness, heartless. It's a
little
bit. Well,
I mean, there's actually something to his speech, which, you know, because it expresses, like, because he's aware of the wielding, you know, black magic, and he says, yeah, you know, that's proof of how powerful, you know, Emperor Zeref is that, you know, he has that great amount of darkness inside him, and so he wields black magic. And Gray's like, wait, so you guys know that you're working for a horrible, evil emperor? And he says, well, no, darkness isn't good or bad. It's just a source of power. You know, it's like saying, oh, light's good and not bad. So, you know, I guess, are meant to assume that he's wrong, but I like that justification for why he's following Zeref is like, oh, yeah, I understand there's great darkness inside him, but that just means he's powerful, you know?
The issue I have, though,
okay,
is in the follow-up. Because Gray says, and the darkness within you is on the verge of release. So Gray says, don't give me that bull pocky, pooky, pukey. I don't know what the fuck, bull pukey. They said bullshit. Just say bullshit. Don't give me that bullshit. I ain't never been the squeaky clean hero type anyway. I'll become evil, or whatever you want, if it's to save my guild. You tell him, Gray! And then Ratsu just unfreezes himself to be like, yeah, we'll all become evil to save the guild if that's what we need to. And everyone's like, yeah, you're right. Woo, let's be evil. It's the most hollow bullshit fucking sentiment. They even turned the concept of being evil into a fucking friendship speech.
We'll be evil best buddies.
Yeah, we'll all be evil together so long as we're friends. I'll kill 7 people if I have to, including children, if it's for my nakama. Shut the fuck up.
We'll build a pile of corpses and then hold hands around it and sing, we are fairy tale.
I'll carve off Lucy's skin and wear it as a dress if I want to, but it's okay, because she's in my heart. It's like, I can't do this or shit fairy tale.
And you know, the other parts that my digestive system passed on.
It's fine. I'm so tired of this stupid-ass manga. Why can't you be over? Gray notes like, oh, you're free, and essentially they're about to turn the tables, but then Brandis shows up. I guess she's not affected by the freezing, because she's in a fucking bikini and just walks up without any care, grabs
Natsu. Lucy seemed to be fine, too.
Well, she was frozen until a moment ago.
Oh, yeah, but so she seems to be fine wearing a bikini and isn't reacting to the cold at all now.
Yeah, but I assume that's who just heated her up. Brandis doesn't have that. Maybe, yeah. She's thinking
again. There was a point to that cover.
Oh. So Brandis shows up and basically just grabs him.
And eroticism.
Yeah, she basically just grabs him. She's like, we go now. Stop, 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 stop. And just takes them out of the scene. At which point, Invil's like,
We go to other scene.
Yeah, we go other place now. Bum, 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 bum. At which point, Invil's like, oh, right, I have this broken-ass magic I haven't used. Zink! And he makes this ice magic shackle around Gray and Yuvia. Which makes me kind of laugh, because I don't understand how that's pure ice magic.
I can freeze everything. I don't bother making devices. Now, here, wear this device.
Yeah, they put this shackle on with a magic that is completely unrelated to my ice speciality. He puts this collar around
it. It makes your heart cold, and so you don't care, and... Never mind.
Fuck it, just do this. He puts this collar around them, basically a chained link that connects them, and explains that it's ice lock. This magic locks away the mind and makes the body into a puppet. Soon you will both attempt to kill each other, and you will have no say in the matter. The chain will not come off until one of you is dead. According to my calculations, the man will win. When you wring the life from your friend, the darkness shall awaken within you. And Luvia and Gray stare at each other in a tense way because they know what's happening. And Luvia says in these last moments, no, if I am to hurt Gray, then I will kill myself before I lose control.
And Chris, is she going to die?
Is
she going to die?
I'm like, is Gray going to kill Luvia? Holy shit. I can't.
I wouldn't have cared about this nearly as much about I don't know, a year ago, where all of a sudden they were close.
I can't have any emotional investment in this, and beyond that, it's just a like schlocky hack kind of method of really forcing drama into this, where it seems like all of a sudden I put a shackle on you, and you're going to have to fight and kill each other. Will the darkness in your heart overcome you, Gray? Even though, like, 4 pages before this, you were like, I'll become evil if it's for the sake of my guild!
It seems like the last chapter and a half is completely divorced from this last several pages. Mm. You know, the way that the fight was set up and the way that it was going is completely contrary to this development. I will say that I like... I mean, Invil's logic for doing this is at least consistent through the chapter. Mm-hmm. But... purely in terms of developments in events, this doesn't match up. You know, they're having this huge battle to see whose incredible ice magic is the more powerful. How did Gray end up tied to Yuvia and locked in a battle to death? I don't know.
It's just this weird forced melodrama that has to come in. Like, you're watching a CW series or something like that. Like, the logic's not there. It just feels like it's there to give shippers something to, like, think about and discuss for a while. Because I feel like you could have easily done the whole, Inville's preying on the darkness in Gray's heart with this magic thing. You could have done that very easily, where he just keeps peppering and forcing Gray to use more and more of this god-slaying or demon-slaying magic, and seeing if that slowly corrupts him, even to the point of the idea that maybe Gray using that magic that powerful, is actually hurting his friends around him, because they can't stand that cult. It's starting to kill them. You could even put that in, and let Yuvia's relationship with Gray prey into this, the darkness within him. But it's just this idea that, like, some arbitrary collar gets locked around his neck, and now they're going to have to fight one another to the death. You don't buy it for a second. There's no moment in Fairy Tale you could possibly comprehend this happening in. Just kind of a waste.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to Food Wars, chapter 179, Confrontation. Last time, Rindo suddenly dropped a bombshell on Tadakoro and Soma and Tsukumi that they would have to face members of the council, the Elite Ten Council. And so they learn about they are reacting to this news. Erina is thinking to herself, wow, Father, you really do intend to use the advancement exam as a way to get rid of all of the resistors no matter what. And Megumi reacts to this, like, oh my gosh, Soma, where are we going to? She looks over at Soma. Soma's like,
oh, she's so cool.
And she's like, oh, you look super excited. She looks over at Tsukumi. Tsukumi's got the exact same expression. Not you two!
I do like it that they're just both such shonen heroes. They're just like, I can't wait to fight someone strong.
And Rindo's just like, ha, these guys are so, oh gosh, so fun. We then get our, like, title page. Featuring, honestly, a pretty badass-looking Rindo, posing with her winter jacket. I like the, you know, I'm in winter, you know, I'm just kind of posing, looking cool. But I do think it's hilarious that she's wearing, you know, a sweater over her uniform, and then a heavy jacket over that, and then a skirt that's, like, about 8 inches long.
flying in the wind.
It's okay, my legs are impervious to cold.
Yeah. That's where I store all my my fat, so I can absorb it.
A bit of time passes because they aren't actually going to have their exam until they actually get off the train. It's the next morning, and so Tadakoro is waking up. It's actually kind of cool because, you know, we get to see the characters in, you know, ways we don't normally see them. So Megumi doesn't have her hair braided yet. She's just got it tied behind her head so that she can wash her face and stuff. And she's thinking to herself, oh, I hardly got any sleep last night. Oh, gosh. And then she looks over at someone who's got huge bags under her eyes. Did you sleep at all? And were you nervous? And so it was no, I was just really excited. He was just, like, lying awake in his bed going, will I get to battle? Will I get to battle? Will I get to battle? and then suddenly they hear Tsukumi behind them. Oh, Yukihira, you act like a child on the night before a trip to Disneyland. I doubt you'll be able to make a proper dish. He comes in, he's just as sleep deprived.
I'm like, there's two car keepers in this bus. Train.
Oh, God. Yeah. But they're getting ready for the day, and they're like, all right, we're going to have to, you know, really do this. We're going to have to tackle this as if we're taking down the entire council right here. We cut over to Erina, who is deep in thought, we're actually having a flashback to the night before, oddly enough. I don't know why we didn't just have this before we cut over. I don't know. I guess it's because Erina is thinking about the situation.
She's wondering who it is that's writing, because Rindo notes, it's not me.
Yeah, which I think is a really smart move, because Rindo is established as being, you know, the number two member of the council. So at this point in the series, I was thinking, oh, maybe they'll go up against, like, Azon, who's, like, out for revenge, or something like that. But, you know, there are enough members of the Council of Ten that you could preserve the higher-ranking members while still having all of their groups of resistors someone to go up against.
Exactly.
So, I highly doubt that, you know, we're going to see someone go up against Tsukasa, because then they would disintegrate.
Yes.
Soma actually did guess, you know, oh, yeah, I guess I'm going against you. And Drew's like, no, unfortunately, it's not me. I wish it could be, though. But we'll give you all the details tomorrow, so, you know, good night. Baron actually notes, I actually called out to Hisaka to figure out what was going on. The resistance has been split across four routes. So Not even like half the council are going to see in action for this. Well, as we find out. But you're saying to yourself, wow, this is, you know, really serious, though. Of all the stuff that they could pull, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, the council's got all the best chefs in Totsuki. We have no idea which of them we're going to have to go against until we actually arrive, so they can't even prepare for this. So I've done everything I can. You know, I can't be there to, you know, guide others through this. I just have to have faith in them and that their development will let them actually survive this. Aaron is the real main character right now. Seriously. So they arrive at their destination.
I really think it's effective the way Aaron is being used. Because she's the one who's giving us the drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Soma never gives a shit. He always is going to take on a challenge. So there's no real drama in that just because he always thinks he can win. So Erina in this position, we know she's not going to be threatened to be taken out and eliminated because she's the dean's daughter. He wants her to join him. So he's not going to get rid of her. So she gets to be there worried about everyone else and trying to think and predict what the council's going to do. She creates the drama for us and lets us kind of grasp everything that's happening. Because Soma just doesn't care. He's not going to think on or anything like that. So it's a really effective way to kind of give us the story without kind of, you know, by making sure Aaron is still included in things too.
And it really pays off the stuff that we got from her in the last chapter, where they noted how her relationship with the Kumi had changed. Now she had discarded her, and now she has these people that she cares about and really wants to make it through. Because the person we had at the start of the series only cared about, you know, her own perfection and didn't care about how anyone else did. She just wanted, you know, useless people to be cast aside. And now we have this completely different person who has completely different values. And when she has all these people that she wants to protect, she really can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the train arrives at their destination. And Rindo actually calls Yukihira and everyone else over from the rest of the group, you know, just to like, you guys are doing something different. Come over here. I like how she's somehow already gotten like a freaking table set for her and is eating again. and she, you know, specifically says when Megumi gets worried, he's like, no, you guys have a completely different test. And Arina is still there, and she says, yeah, okay, yeah, this special section of the exam was only meant for the resistors. So it's going to be fair and impartial, correct? Because, you know, there's not going to be some unfortunate shortage of ingredients, or there's not going to be an accidental assignment of subpar ingredients.
A surprise lead pipe to the knees.
those two assholes from America aren't going to suddenly drop pots on their fingers. And she looks really angry at Rindo, and Rindo gives her this really fun, this really cool little look, where she just kind of like, it's like, she doesn't even care that Arina's angry, but she's amused by it.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, no dirty tricks this time. No, that stuff was all done by the test proctors themselves. It wasn't actually Totsuki taking action. The council didn't do anything to actually do that. The competitions themselves will be completely fair. You can even sit in on them if you want, Nakiri. But she also reiterates, you know, the routes are split. There ain't nothing you can do now except sit back and watch. Anyway, she receives word that their opponent is ready. And she says, he just arrived, he's on his way over as we speak, and someone starts getting excited. Who are the Council 10 do I get to do battle with? And he starts thinking, well, actually, hang on. Ishiki-senpai and Kiku-senpai and that thirsty guy all got kicked out weeks ago. So, I wish I could have gone up against Ishiki again. Oh, well, if the administration already has those three, I wonder if they've actually filled those three vacancies with new members. That means I might actually go up against someone who wasn't there for the Momiji meet and greet. Somebody I haven't met yet. And that does turn out to be the case, but this actually makes me curious if we're actually going to get other new members in the other elimination.
I think so.
Yeah. But, holy shit. Long white hair and tan skin greets Erina and Soma and Megumi as we get this big two-page spread as Hayama appears looking over a balcony down at them. And all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, we never saw Hayama protect his society during the eliminations.
We haven't ever seen him on the side of the resistors, really.
We haven't seen him resisting. We just kind of assumed it would happen because of his teacher. And they're like, oh, what's going on? And I like Soma's little remark here. Ah, hey, Hayama. Tacky piece of jewelry you got on your shirt there. Pointing out the Council of Ten Seal.
Ah, the moment it's like you get the walking steps and like the shots behind him and the full two-page spread, it's just, it was like a moment of just like, oh, like pure ecstasy. Like, oh, it's so sweet.
This is like one of the best things that could have been done with Hayama, because when you think about it, like, he could have sort of been lost in the shuffle if he was with the resistors.
Mm-hmm. This is actually, I've heard some people saying, like, it doesn't make sense for just... Well, I think that, yeah, there could easily be logic around this. You know, perhaps he's forced into this in some fashion.
Maybe he's doing this to protect his teacher.
Yeah. But what's interesting is the aggression towards Soma, I think, is 100% legitimate. And this is the perfect opponent for Soma to be going up against. Because they announced that he's the new ninth seat. So we know Aizon's actually been lifted up. But this is somebody...
Did he get promoted?
He must be, because Aizon was his ninth seat before.
Yeah,
so he must have gotten lifted up.
But what if Azami punished him? But,
it's possible.
No, because Eren is still the tenth seat. Never mind.
Yeah. So I presume he got lifted up.
I completely forgot when that idea popped in my head. Maybe he's been punished. But no, Eren is still the tenth seat, so that can't be the case.
But the thing that's important...
Well, unless
you
got promoted.
This is the most significant character that holds a decisive victory over Soma. He beat him in the Fall Classic when both of them were going all out.
And he's only the ninth seed.
This isn't Aizon. We know that this guy has been working his ass off too. So the idea that Soma might have to go against, or is going to have to go against him, is like a grudge match. Like, this is like a rival figure showing up, and the rival is... This is like going up against Gary Oak, and you're like, holy shit, this dude's always been ahead of me. So I'm really excited to see this.
Gary Oak in the anime. I beat you 5 times already. How are you the champion?
I crushed your ass back at the fucking Indigo League before I even got here.
Oh, look, a Pidgeotto.
Well, thank God you leave with the same Pokemon each time. But I do, like, this is the kind of perfect opponent for this, because this is maybe Soma's marquee rival at this point. Outside of possibly Tsukasa, but I can't even consider them on the same level. If someone near his level, this is the right person for it.
Yeah. But Soma actually, you know, points out, oh, yeah, I got that badge on you. Did somebody put it on you when you weren't looking? And Rinda's like, nope. Nope. Now that he's one of the new members of the Council of Ten. He's part of Central. And Hayama, like, smirks. And... There's something about a good costume change.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps. A freaking black long coat with furred collar. Oh, Hayama, you look like an awesome douchebag.
I love their back and forth, though, too. Like, I love how it even just starts out with someone being like, look at that piece of jewelry. And someone sticking on you when you ain't looking. You're like, you and I aren't even equals anymore. And this perfect...
I'm in a position to test you.
And a perfect visual, too, where he's literally standing on a balcony before him. Like, the grand entranceway for a supreme douchebag.
Mm-hmm. And Soma gets pissed off. He's like, what about the Shiomi seminar? I have him just says, it's shut down, of course. The Institute needs no independently operating organizations beyond Central. That's what Dean Azami decreed. I shouldn't have to tell you that. And Megumi's like, well, wait a minute, what about Professor Shiomi? You know, and Hayama, it's this great little sequence, because he looks at her and closes his eyes and he says, yeah, you got some questions? Well, I've got some for you, too. What the hell have you been doing? Protecting your pathetic dorm? Throwing tantrums over the Azami administration? Aren't you setting your goals a little low? You came after me full force during the Classic, so tell me, when you said you were going to take the top spot in the Institute, was that nothing but a lie? Because while you were wasting time, I was stretching my fingertips out enough to touch the base of the pinnacle. Now I'm going to kick you out and take the pinnacle for myself. So show me what you got, Yukihira. It's time you learn the true price of failure. This was one of my favorite chapters this week.
Oh, this is a great chapter. This was a great. I've been very disinterested in Food Wars over, like, the past month or so, just kind of like, whatever. This was a chapter that, like...
regularly, like, the end, every time they ever come to something, it's like, what, that's it?
Yeah. And, this was a chapter that just grabbed me by the balls. It was like, you're paying attention to me again! It's like, yes, ma'am!
I am really curious to see how this is going to turn out, because, I mean, Soma took it to Hayama last time. You know, it's going to definitely be tough for them to overcome him, but Hayama's one that we can tell is at least roughly around the same level as these three, who also all made the final eight in the Fall Classic. But if he's the ninth seat of the council, then who the fuck are the others going to have to take on? You know, with, like, okay, Hisako and Kurokiba and Alice are probably still going to be okay, like I said last time. But seriously, like, freaking Yoshino... and
the Dude Bros.
The Dude Bros. you know, Ryoko, like, the ones that, like, we barely even know well enough to even know what their cooking gimmick is. Like, how the hell are they supposed to fare against the Elite Ten? So I'm really excited about this. This was a really big development, and I'm looking forward to next week's chapter.
It is very cool.
Let's move on to chapter 103.
Of Love Rush real quick.
Oh, well, Love Rush. It's by the guy who did, E-Robot? Yes. It's basically, the premise is it's a harem series with love cupids and monster girls and a magically attractive protagonist. Like, they threw in this bullshit scientific explanation for why he's attracted to so many women, except for his childhood friend whom he has a crush on, who is super stoic. And a karate girl. I don't know. It seems, you know, very Shonen Jump harem romance comedy. So, whatever.
This is by the same guy who did E-Robot, which we very greatly maligned by the came out.
Nearly as bad as that.
I will give the series this. The art's a lot better, and it's a bit more of an interesting premise. I do kind of find it funny that they actually justify the whole harem subplot as, like, he's genetically fucking, like, it's like a superpower that women are attracted to him.
It's like he exudes pheromones, almost.
Yeah. But, that said, it's still kind of in that genre that I just don't have much interest in, so... this might be the only time we actually talk about it on the show, but I thought we'd bring it up here.
Yeah. Let's go on to My Hero Academia, number 103, The Test, with one of the Western comic-style covers featuring Deku and Todoroki posing all badass. Like the color scheme, honestly. Mm-hmm. And also just the way that they're posed together and seeing them from the side. Anyway, last time was established, you know, what some of, the UA students, are going to have to go up against because they're competing against other schools', students. Suddenly they're greeted by a teacher, Ms. Joke, the smile hero, who comes up and talks to Aizawa and just goes, "Let's get married!" And Aizawa immediately goes, "No." And he just keeps on making these, like, deadpan responses to her while she's busting out laughing. And Deku explains, she can force those around her to start laughing, effectively slowing their thoughts and movements. The methods she uses to take down villains are insane.
But you kind of so like it. It's like...
So Aizawa uses power negation abilities to completely no-sell all her gags.
I do find it, like, interesting to have, like, the heroic... Essentially, like, the heroic version of Joker.
Oh, and also, like, basically a heroic double act from some asshole Joker and someone who just does not give a shit. Oh, God. But she has her students come up and introduce themselves. She says, yeah, this is class 2 of Ketsubetsu Academy, so say hello to my students. One of them, Shindo... reaches for a bunch of them and, you know, takes them by the hand for a handshake and says, oh man, you guys have really had it rough over at UA for a while, but, you know, you guys are still set on becoming heroes, so keep at it. I believe the heroes of tomorrow need to have that kind of fortitude. And, Kaminari's like, oh, he's so cool. Oh, yeah, and here's Baku over here at the heart of that whole Kamino mess. You've got the strongest will of all. I'm so glad we get a chance to face guys of your caliber today. We're going to give it our best. And Baku fucking slaps his hand away. He's like, cut the crap. Your lips can flap all they want, but your mug says otherwise. Basically saying, I can tell you're not being sincere.
I don't buy this horse shit.
Now, Chris, you have a theory about Shindo.
I believe that he has a hand-based quirk, because you notice he shakes everybody's hand, was going for it with Bakugo, and he slaps it away. I think he's shaking everyone's hand because he has a quirk that gives him an advantage over people if he gets that kind of touch on you or something like that. Like, if he shakes your hand, he can always know where you are, or something like that. Some aspect of the fact that he's shaking people's hands is going to be very important, and it's going to be very important specifically that Bakugo didn't have his hand touched.
It's a very deliberate handshake, too, where he grasps both hands around the person's hand.
And that's what he leads with every time. Like, that's what he's doing to Bakugo, and he has his eyes down in that kind of insidious manner. So I feel that's definitely what they're suggesting here. So, well, Bakugo touched his hand, but he didn't...
He
I
didn't
think it's like palm
it
to palm,
hands.
Basically.
He also didn't grasp it with both. They only briefly touched. So that might... Maybe it depends on how much of a contact between hands there is, and maybe his powers only have slight effectiveness, if you're right about this. But either way, it's even without that whole handshake theory, I like how Bakugo is just like, nah, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
It's a cool moment besides that. There is also a bit where some of the other Ketsubetsu students go up to Todoroki and are like, can I get your autograph? And Mina is like, I'll give you my autograph. Get a Mineta 316 shirt. That puts money in the checkbook.
Mineta 316 says, I just looked up your skirt.
Oh, hell yeah. Jim Johnson wrote a kick-ass thing for me. Oh, God. Jiro says, wow, you know, meeting all these other schools is a good reminder. And Kamara is like, yeah, we're practically celebrities here. And Ms. Joke says, hey, Racer, did you, like, not tell them? And, yeah, alluding to something we learn later in the chapter as, we head inside the first room of the testing chamber. A huge mass of students all crowded into this big room with a video screen at the head of it. And there's this guy standing in front of it at a podium, and he says, I'm Mera, the Heroes Public Safety Commission. My favorite type of sleep is non-REM sleep. Nice to meet you all. Work is so busy, I barely get any sleep. We're so terribly short-staffed. I just want to sleep. Anyway, let's explain the exam.
Yeah, anyway, here's what you're doing. I'm like, oh, fuck that stupid lonely guy in Black Clover. This is the character I relate with. It's like every day me at my desk, like, I want to sleep. Can you do it yourself? And I'm just
going, oh, puppy dogs, man.
That's what I dream of immediately. Puppy dogs. Oh, so sexy.
Oh, Scotia.
I love you, Scotia. You're the cutest doggy.
Not like other loud-ass barky dogs.
You only get angry and then the pizza pie comes. Order the black person outside. I'm trying to teach that out of you, but you don't know color. You just know hate.
But he says, all 1,540 examinees present will be competing in a massive free-for-all exercise. He essentially says it's kind of going to be like laser tag. After he gives them a lecture about, you know, the importance of being a hero, you know, society says that there's too many heroes and so we've really got to weed you out. But then he goes on to say, here's how this is going to work. Out of all of you, the first 100 examinees to meet the requirements are going to pass. Only 100 out of over 1,500 of them are going to pass. He says, okay, look, you know, these are the tools we're going to have. You're going to have 3 targets. You can place them on any part of your body that you like, so long as they are exposed. You can't, you know, put them on the bottom of your feet, can't put them under your armpit or anything like that. Each of you is also going to have 6 balls to carry around. The targets are rigged to light up only when you're struck by a ball. You're disqualified the instant that all 3 of your targets are lit. Those with 3 eliminated targets are considered defeated, and to pass you must defeat 2 other examinees, and that is it. He says, okay, yeah, we're going to hand out your balls to targets, and then once this place opens up, The exam begins 1 minute after you're all fully equipped. And after they do that, they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to open it up. And the entire room unfolds.
Literally opens up.
And they're in this massive arena, like a football field inside a city, inside of a football stadium. And they say, okay, yeah, use your talents and try and survive.
There's a whole variety of areas. You can take a big city, yeah, a mountain, a construction yard, a waterfall, forest. So the idea is, like, no matter what your quirk is, we have an environment that you can thrive in here.
Mm-hmm. So Ms. Joke is talking with Eraser up in the bleachers. And she tries to go, like, your fly's down. And as I was like...
I want, like, every chapter to just have her coming in with some stupid fucking joke that she's laughing at the entire time, and just him, like, I fucking hate that. Like, I want one chapter.
I kind of want them to actually get married.
You started shipping again, Nick. I want one chapter. Everyone would hate it, but it's essentially her giving the fucking moth joke that Norm MacDonald gave on Conan O'Brien that one time, like the 7 minute fucking joke that just ends with the moth being like, the light was on, and just her like shitting her pants.
The moral of the she's like, and the light says, I am the purple wombat. And then he stood up and he fell off the boat and drowned. The moral of the story is don't stand up in a moth.
He's just saying, like, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to kill the shit out of this girl.
And the father asks, why did you ask for so many pink ping pong balls? And the son says, they were for... And then he dies. Oh, God. But Ms. Joke observes, getting a little more serious. You know, it's a rare year. You haven't failed anyone yet. You've still got all 20 of your students. I guess you must be really fond of this class. And I was like, not really.
They're okay.
Yeah. But she says, meanwhile, Deku and company are, like, trying to figure out what to do. Deku's trying to get them all together and say, okay, yeah, we should actually meet up and work together and watch each other's backs. But Baku is like, as if. This ain't some class picnic. He just runs off.
I do like that.
I mean, Kirishima runs after. And Todoroki also says, I'm no good if I have to, you know, hold my power back and we're packed together. So I'm going to head off, too. I like that little detail. It's like, my power is way too freaking widespread for me to actually be effective in a group like that. So I'll just be hurting you. Mm. So, yeah. Ms. Joke points out, you know, the format might be different every year, but this exam, you know, there's that tradition to think of. Out of all the schools competing here today, there's only one that's lost the advantage of having unknown quirks. One top school whose students had their quirk styles and weaknesses exposed to the world thanks to the sports festival. If you like this class so much, you should have told them. The exam always starts off with the UA crush, and as soon as the starting bell goes off, every other class basically descends on Deku's group. And Shindo goes, oh, yeah, okay. Super strength that wrecks your home body. Okay, well, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down first. And just a barrage of balls get thrown out. One of them's on fire, because that'll totally help. But Aizawa says, oh, yeah, the UA crush. It's not like I didn't tell them for any particular reason. It's not going to change what they've got to do here. So immediately we get this 2-page spread of Deku's group taking action, deflecting all the balls thrown their way. It's a really cool group pose, with Deku lashing out with his new shoot style, and Ashido uses her more concentrated acid to burn one of them away. Tokoyami is using his shadow to deflect one. It looks like up in the sky, Uraraka is getting one to get away from her. And even Mineta is using his weird sticky ball chain to knock a few of them away. And Aizawa says, it's a hero's job to turn the tables in a pinch. Once they go pro, it's a simple fact of life that their course will be known to all. No offense, but compared to the rest of you, we're looking towards the future. So, cool little moment to kick things off there.
I'm excited for this little arc. It should be pretty fun.
Yeah, it's like, well, what's the point? What's the point of you know, holding their hands through this part of it? They're going to have to deal with surprises along the way and get used to be targeted by the remotes. So, Yeah, so let's look forward to more developments in the next chapter. And I guess we'll move on to One Piece, chapter 836 of Lola's Viver Card. I wonder what this chapter will be about. Maybe it'll be all about Aokiji, him on the front cover.
I think we're actually going to be jumping back to Zoro's group for a little bit and see what they're having for dinner.
Last time, of course, we learned that Charlotte and what's-his-face...
Pound, as we come to find.
Pound. Is they're Lola's parents. And Nami flashes back. It's a bit of a reminder of who Lola is. Some of the time they spent together on Thriller Bark. And, you know, presenting her with Big Mom's Viver Card. And so Nami's like, oh, this is Lola's father? And more characters arrive from the group that had set out to capture Luffy and company. Randolph arrives on his crane, crashes into the ground very suddenly. I'm not sure if anything, like, hit him, or...
It's just because, what's-his-name says stop.
Oh.
And I guess he just dive-bombs, because he's already dive-bombed. He's like, well, I can't attack, so I just crash into the ground, because what else is I gonna do?
Right. And a whole bunch of the trees also suddenly wither and go away, and they're like, was that Haki? I was like, oh, no, it wasn't Haki. And now he's like, well, did they just suddenly lose life out of fear or something? What's going on? And sure, yeah, a bunch of the trees are reacting to the presence of one of the Sweet Three being there. And, yeah, Cracker's like, well, am I not allowed to be here? And they're like, no, we didn't mean to imply such a thing! But a weird little development, like, what did he do exactly? There's a cute little moment where Cracker scolds Randolph, and they're like, oh, you must think really highly of yourself, you know, if you interrupt my business. And Randolph points to the crane and goes, he said to do it. Oh, I didn't!
Oh, you fuck!
Oh, God. And we get a lot of I'm not sure if you can really call it exposition. I guess that's the best term for it in this sequence, but it's a lot of just kind of just sharing details of stuff that we kind of already know. There's a giant tree there who does a lot of tree puns in his speech, of course, introduced as the master of the seducing woods, King Baum, who looks a lot like the great Deku tree because he's got the mustache. They go over, like, okay, yeah, you know, the Vinsmoke families are arriving at the Whole Cake Chateau by the middle of the day tomorrow. We've got to make sure that we join our house with theirs. The one woman who was there before reveals that she has not only captured Carrot, but also Chopper. Luffy is like, what happened to you guys? What are you doing in there? Yeah, she's like, yeah, I caught them, and then she drops the mirror on the ground and it shatters, and Luffy's like, no! And Chopper's like, it's okay, we haven't actually shattered.
We're okay, dude.
We're just still trapped in this part of the mirror. Cracker actually prepares to execute Pound, who, you know, says like, oh, come on, no, look, don't do this, you know, I could be considered your father, Cracker. No, you can't. Well, look, to Mama, all of her past 43 husbands are nothing but strangers connected by blood. And that's not fair. You know, we're fathers to her daughters. You can't do this. And Luffy jumps in as Cracker's swinging his sword and kicks it away to save Pound. And I like the little comment that they make because Cracker drops Pound to the ground. And says, so you have sympathy for him. And Luffy says, when you see someone dozens of times, you can't help but get a bit attached.
Because I kept asking him
to. Yeah, he does. But
I do like that, where it's like, I won't let you hurt him, because I'm attached to him, about to run into him so many times, getting lost as fuck.
Nami rushes up towards Pound, and says, okay, we've got to get to you to a safe distance. The homies start to close in on them to try and seize them, and Nami says, oh, hang on a second, I found it, and she, of course, from her cleavage, this is like her new bag of holding is just her boobs, pulls out the Viver Card she got from Lola. And as soon as he holds it up, suddenly it starts to glow. And all of the homies react to it all of a sudden. And even King Bomb is. And they're like, what's going on here? And they say, I could sense Mama's powerful soul emanating from her. So even just having something that is connected to her life force is causing them to react. And it's because they were imparted with life mm-hmm. by her. It's not the power of her soul or something like that, because, you know, her own daughter is like, what the fuck are you guys doing? What are you doing? Luffy is actually sent flying all of a sudden and hits one of the trees and comes to a stop, and Cracker steps in and he demonstrates his power by tapping his shoulder and says, hit it once and it grows into two. Hit it again, it turns into three, and suddenly he's got eight arms all with swords and Cracker shields on them. Do not even dream that you can defeat me. You shall not interfere with Mama's tea party. We get a big caption for him, introducing him as the Big Mom Pirate Sweet Three Generals, Thousand Armed Cracker, Bounty 860 Million Berry. Jesus Christ,
there's been a big jump in bounties recently. And I'm sitting here like, how can Zoro defeat him if he's not here?
That does seem like the logical step of, oh, he can have 1,000 swords.
I like the logic that Zoro will somehow just have, like, a proxy fight with him from where he is. Like, they'll just be, like, having a sword fight from oceans away.
Banami warns Luffy not to get into a serious fight because that's not their goal. We need to get, you know, past the force and reach Sanji. But Luffy says, I don't know any way to fight other than seriously.
I do like that line, too. That's the one thing I really want to know about that. I think this chapter was good at making me kind of like Pound a little bit more. I guess it was just sympathetic seeing him in so much danger when, like, the only thing he wants is to kind of see his daughter. And then hearing, like, no, you know, Big Mom doesn't even consider you family. You're just a stranger. You have no connection to us by blood. He's like, but I do! My daughters!
Really goes to show the difference between Big Mom and her kids. Or some of her kids, that they seem to actually treasure the people that they've kind of been forced to marry, whereas Charlotte's just kind of like, I'll marry this person. And I've popped out a few kids with them, and so I've, you know, spread myself to another series that, fuck you, go away.
Yeah.
Just use them. But a good chapter. I did quite like it. I'm not sure if it was, like, my favorite this week, but I did like it. I guess we'll briefly touch on the Promised Neverland, because this is the last Jumpstart chapter we're getting from them. I do hope we'll see more from it, because this is a very effective, like, three chapters for Jumpstart, because it gives me enough to want to see more, but I haven't yet settled on, like, if I'm actually going to like it yet, so I'm curious to find out more and then decide. So, well done there. But the big thing that we find out from this is, because we have some moments of tension in terms of the kids encountering Mom, especially one where Emma has, like, a confrontation with her, and she realizes, like, she's trying to search for a reaction from me, so I just have to act completely normal. She puts on this big, happy smile and gives her a hug and stuff and is faking it the whole time. And as soon as they're actually just, you know, safely away, then she just, oh, collapses.
It's done really effective because she's just thinking about how they need to escape, and she comes upon a place where there was a drawing that Connie had made, and she's just sitting there kind of, like, feeling bad the fact that Connie's gone. And it's just a full-page spread of Mom, like, kneeling down to catch her right in the eye, staring directly at her. And it's, there's, like, that tension that you just immediately feel when you're like, holy shit, Mom is thinking something's up. She's digging into this. Like, it's that fear, that palpable terror you kind of get that's very hard to effectively convey a lot of the time in manga.
Yeah. They managed to get away with it for now. Because they established some more rules, because they're like, okay, you know, I forget the other kid's name, throws out the theory that, okay, well, children's brains start to reach full maturity when they're like 6 years old, and it's said that they're at peak maturity when they're 12. So the demons probably feed on our brains, and it probably has to do with they're more delicious the more knowledgeable we are, the smarter we are.
The more developed the brain. It seems like the brain's the most delicious part of the body, so that's right. It's...
But if a kid's not developing well and they're doing poorly on the test, then they know that when it reaches full maturity, it's not going to be worth it, so they just cut it off early. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, going off on their plan to figure this stuff out. They also discuss the way that the tracking device works, because they figure out she can only tell we're missing if she actually looks at it. She can't, it doesn't alert her if we're somewhere we're not supposed to be. She actually has to look and check where we are. And also, it doesn't tell who each of us individually are. And then the very end, we find out that Mom is actually, has a number on her neck the same as the kids. And she says to herself, I won't let anyone escape. I'll be the one to leave here.
Very interesting conclusion.
Which changes the way that the whole series feels, because now it feels like it's a game. It's a deadly game, like, I don't want to say Batum, because that was a terrible series. But, you know, it's set up like a game where they're fighting for their lives. And so a game has rules, you know, and they're starting to establish the rules as we go forward in the series, too.
It's a good twist to put here. It's unfortunate to us since we only get 3 chapters, but it's a good twist to kind of put in, because it really shakes your... No, Mom's not just a villain anymore. She's someone else presumably trying to survive. And it's like, how does one of these kids come to become Mom, in a way? Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But who knows if we'll get to see any more. There are 2 spots in the magazine that have just opened up with Nisekoi and Bleach ending, so possibly one of the jump starts we get may fill in that spot, and people seem to really dig Promised Neverland. If you like it, vote for it in the survey, which I would love to tell you the address to, but I can't find it now that they've re-updated their site.
Stupid fucking new site with their terrible reader.
I don't have an issue with anything else. I don't know where the survey is anymore.
Mm.
So...
I guess we'll have to find it.
Yeah. Find it, and then vote for your favorite series.
Move on to Toriko, Gourmet 383. Toriko and Star June. We cut over to the IGO headquarters. Mansum is laughing, and they're like, President Mansum, the earth's shaking. Is this really a time to be laughing? And he's like, I'm laughing at myself for being so powerless!
Okay.
I miss Mansum. yeah. They all worried about stuff. I don't know. A lot happens in this chapter, but I don't know. I also feel like not a lot happens. You know what I mean?
It's a lot we kind of already heard or already knew was happening. Like, we already know that Star June and Toriko are brothers. Or maybe we didn't know it, but it's been very heavily hinted to the point it's like, come on. Like, obviously, you know, we kind of already got a little bit of an impression that there might be more to Food Look than we thought. Like, we already kind of heard that, you know, Komatsu was calling out to people from within God. And we already knew that Midoriya had escaped the can and would presumably be coming to this fight. So we get interesting details. Like, this is Chi-Chi's sacrifice. He's essentially killing himself to save Toriko and the others. It's bringing them
like,
back.
He's, like, feeding himself.
Yeah. We find out that Setsuno is protecting the world, but she can't do it anymore. Her body is giving out. The next time someone does an attack that could potentially destroy the planet, she's going to give. And then, you know, the whole gourmet world will suffer. You know, there are things in there that are interesting, but it is a lot we've kind of already known and things like that. Not a bad thing, but I am particularly of the case of, like, I just want to find out what the fuck their parents are. Like, I'm tired of trying to think on it on my end, and like...
Do you know whose son I am?
It reminds me of, like, season 4 of Lost, where, like, so many episodes would end with, like, who are you? And someone will walk into the room like, I'm Steve. And I'm like, I don't want to... Tell me who Steve is now! Stop fucking teasing things.
Nah. There is a cool moment where Acacia essentially, you know, the meal fit for a king attack that they use to destroy the 4 kings, the 4 beasts, he unleashes, like, a meteor storm of them. I mean, basically human extinction attacks from Dragon Ball. And it's about to hit Setsuna's shield, and suddenly they all fizzle and burn away, and that announces Midoriya's arrival. It's a cool entrance, as he just go, nope.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, a lot happens, but a lot of it doesn't really feel like it has the impact it should to me. Do we want to, like, plug anything before we hit World Trigger?
Yes, I actually do. There is a contest going on, guys. I'm sorry, I just had to finish typing up a comment real quick. There's a contest going on that's being hosted by Annalisa, who you guys know we've had her on the show quite a few times. She's the letter for World Trigger. It's actually a World Trigger-related contest. She is going to be putting together another care package to send to Ashihara-sensei. And you guys might remember that the last time one of these came in, he actually commented on it in the author's comments at the end of an issue, saying, like, I got this box, thank you to everybody. She's putting together another one of these, and she's looking for fan letters, fan art, any other items, no food, but, like, any other physical items that you want to send over to Ashihara, send them to her. You can get her on her Twitter, at Kaito_Ace. And if you get them to her, she's not going to send it over until after December 1st of this year, but if you get the items to her or enter your items in by the end of the month, by August 31st, you will be entered into a drawing to win a couple volumes. I actually picked these up and I'm donating them to this cause. I've got some first volume print versions of Haikyuu that are going to be given away as a kind of lottery to the system. So if you weren't considering it before, you can enter something, you know, write something to Ashihara, send it to her, she'll include it in there, and you'll have a chance to win some of these. If it's a listener from Weekly Manga Recap who wins one of these, if you want, I'll sign this, and considering time and money, I can also try sending it down to Nick and have him sign it too, if that's your interest. If you don't want it, no worries, we don't need to sign it too. But you can get yourself a free manga out of this, and it'll be really cool to kind of send it down to Ashihara. I think he's working very hard, he's a great guy. If you like World Trigger, I think it's definitely worth it to just take a few moments out and write something down to him, and you can get a free manga out of it. And Haikyuu is an excellent series. If you have not read this yet, highly recommend it. Let this be the start of a new collection for you. So I have 5 of these, and all of these are going to this cause, so it's not like you have a 1-in-a-million shot to do it. Just send something over, Kaito_Ace on Twitter, and she's also in the chat right now, so you can message her there. But yeah, that's a contest to get your stuff in, guys.
All right, let's wrap things up then with World Trigger, Chapter 154, Tatsuhito Ikoma, Part 2. Last time, Ikoma used his signature attack, the Ikoma Whirlwind. Managed to wound Yuma, but he was seemingly surprised it didn't just kill him. And Ikoma reiterates that at the start of this chapter. He's like, "Huh, they should have all died from this distance. All of them over there." His squad mate says, "It was just lucky. Just try it again." And he goes like, "Yeah, that's a good idea." And all of them dodge out of the way of it. The announcers start talking about the Ikoma Whirlwind, and they're like, "Yeah, he's got the longest range among all of the attackers because of that technique." And Zoe asks, well, how's that different from the regular Kogetsu Whirlwind? You know, I can't tell because no one actually uses that weapon in my squad." And the announcer says, "Well, see, the whirlwind's range extension is inversely proportional to the effective time." Tone's like, "Inversely, I see." And so I was like, "You know what that means, don't you?"
He's like, "Of course I do.
But she explains, "The shorter the effective time is, the longer the range extends. So for most attackers, including Tachikawa, you take 1 second to activate the whirlwind, and then it extends for 15 meters. But Iko shortens the activation time to about 0.2 seconds, and can maximize the firing range even more. This is usually impossible unless the sword that's drawn is incredibly fast and perfectly synchronizes at the right time with the whirlwind. It's an unparalleled move that nobody else can perform." It's basically a version of a fast draw technique, like one slash style. If you read Rurouni Kenshin, you probably heard of it, where you draw and slash in the same motion, and you have to do it really, really quickly. It's essentially a version of that, except it shoots out a laser slash from the tip of it, which is badass. And we cut back into the arena, and Ikoma goes, "It feels like someone just praised me right now." And Squamate's like, "Well, no, you missed. You're going to be imagining it." Oh, God. OG Squad is like, "Well, shit, what are we going to do?" Because we're between Kuga and all the Ikoma Squad now. So they try and fight off Yuma, who starts to lead them away, running away from them. So Ikoma's squad starts to close in, and his squad mate launches a blast of bullets while going, "Roid!" And like, "Wait a minute, he's not using Asteroid, he's using Hound!" And he's like, "Oh, they figured it out."
That would have been the moment I would have been like, "I'm the smartest motherfucker on the planet. I'm going to say it's one type, but I'm using the other." And when they countered it, I'm like, "Bullshit. That was my trump card. That was the smartest I was ever going to be in this series."
As they're dodging out of the way, Ikoma tries to slash one of them down through the air. He uses his grasshopper to bound away. But Chica and the other snipers start to shoot him down. And they're like, "Okay, crap, what do we do?" They're all reacting to these different attacks from different angles. And suddenly Yuma comes whirling, flying in, and just cuts the guy's head clean off as he lands on the ground.
It's so fucking badass. Like, because you
don't
see
it. It's all in the motion of the bagworm.
Yeah, it looks like a Grim Reaper just popped into the scene and just psyched that dude's head clean off. It's awesome.
So the Atomic Comic 2 gets their first voice. I love the way that this was translated with Zoe going, "That bagworm attack, though!" Like, damn right. Everyone reacts to this news as the commentators recap. Okay, you know, this is, you know, OG Squad losing their centerpiece for mid-range combat. They're analyzing what they're going to do. They're talking about, oh, you know, Kurauchi lost his leg, so he could have, you know, kept him, they could have kept him alive to take away Oji's mobility, but Yuma chose to take him down instead. They're analyzing all the different choices that they made. Oji squad reacts to this and, says, "Okay, look, we've got to figure out a way to get out of Ikoma's firing range, because we're sitting ducks right here." And so their operator says, "Okay, head down these possible paths to get away from the sniper's blind spots." And they quickly start heading to retreat while Ikoma engages with Yuma. Just a really cool little panel, too, where he does it, where Yuma, you know, like, jumps up to dodge a midair slash, and the building behind him is just cleaved in half.
It's pretty awesome.
And Chica's trying to help out too, and Ikoma's, and they're like, "Well, crap, this is what we're gonna do." And Ikoma's like, "Yeah, well, you don't even know where the four-eyed guy is. All right, hello, super cute Mario, can you help us out?" Oh god. So yeah, they're trying to track down where everyone is, but Chica keeps on repositioning. They still don't know where Osamu is. And Ikoma's like, "Okay," they call out to Oki, their sniper. And they're like, "Okay, we're leaving her to you." And she's like, "I can't make promises. And man, this is no fair that I gotta fight a little girl. You know, it's not easy for me to pull the trigger on her. Look, we don't need your good guy act right now. No. Well, why don't you take her out then? And I'll go after Kuga."
He's like, "I can't cut down little girls. Do I look like the kind of guy who can get away with cutting down cute little girls?"
"Yeah, you're the super handsome one. You can get away with anything. Don't blow it. You're gonna lose popularity." I love Ikoma Squad so much. What I love most about this is they're a man down now. They're in this tense situation. The battle is engaged. They're not going, "Okay,
they don't,
you
know, stop.
We're the joke act, but it's time for us to get serious." Like, no, they're weirdos through and through. They're trying to win, and they're concerned about winning, but their behavior persists throughout this.
I legitimately feel like this is the squad we'd be if you and I were in this series. We'd never be taught. We'd always be bullshitting about the horse shit while the fight's going on. It's just for some reason we're innately strong enough to stay relevant in this series, but we never take things like serious in the moment.
You'd be like, "Nick, you go after the girl. You can avoid losing popularity with girls. You've already got a girlfriend."
Yeah, I'm like, "I just have an action figure. You gotta help me out here, Nick." Meanwhile, I've got, like, grenade cannons firing off in all directions. "Help a brother out, Nick. Play wingman for once in your life."
You're being really selfish here.
"Yeah, Nick, I'm really disappointed with you. I'm not gonna buy you those Pop-Tarts after all."
Meanwhile, I've got, like, a leg missing. God, you asshole!
Oh, did I? My bad.
How am I going to concentrate on this fight if I know there's no brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts waiting for me at the end?
It's almost like a Saturday Night Live bit or something like that. This is Wadi doesn't care.
Oh, boy. Yuma manages to close the gap with Ikoma, and they start to engage in closer combat. And then also they're tracking, the announcers are also tracking the movements of everyone else. Oji squad, which had retreated, is suddenly making a break for the snipers. Oji himself going after, Tsuma? Was that his name? Oki. Not, yeah. It's a little confusing because there's Oki and then there's Oji squad. But, so yeah, Oji's going after Oki. I don't know, I'm half expecting Ikoma Squad to make a joke about that at some point. While the other member of Oji Squad is making a break for Chika. So this is going to be interesting now, because we've got all these one-man fights suddenly breaking out, going ahead. And Osamu, meanwhile, is still left on his own. He doesn't have anyone chasing after him anymore. What is he setting up in this time? And most importantly, how is Chika going to react if she's isolated and has to deal with someone coming straight after her? Because, you know, is she going to be able to actually pull off the same stunt with her lead bullet meteor? What's going on here, you know?
I do like that when we see a glimpse of Osamu, we don't get enough to really understand his thoughts on the matter. You can look at it probably in multiple ways where you're like, he seems nervous that things aren't going according to plan, or he's just kind of listening and digesting the information and doesn't seem to be too nervous, so it'd be interesting to see how actually Osamu's plan is going. Like, did they expect this would happen? How is he basically operating?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's it. Really like this chapter. Amusing, but also had some cool action. Nice mix of stuff. Yeah. Let's, I guess, cap things off. I guess before we head too far into it, I guess we want to plug our bonus pod that we, released recently?
Yeah, let's just real quick. So guys, we mentioned it, but in case you haven't heard before, our bonus pod this month is a new thing we're doing. It's called Trollo Tease Trivia. I basically hosted a trivia show. It was between Nick and Tekking. It was all about Bleach. It's our champion patron bonus pod for the month. So if you're a champion patron, you can grab it right now on the website, patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. It was a lot of fun. I think all of us really enjoyed it. The response to it has been very good. We're definitely keeping that in consideration. I even have kept my lightning round card, Nick. You can see that sweet lightning bolt that I designed on it.
You did say that there were lightning bolts on them.
I did. So it's a tremendous amount of fun. We really enjoyed it. I highly recommend that you check it out. And
you put a clip of a little snippet of
yes.
it online for everyone. It's without giving away the context of it, Tekking was trying to name a keto spell. And you can just from that one clip, it really perfectly encapsulates a big element of it, which was not just the amount of fun that we had doing it, but also the level of competition that there was going on between us, and also the surprising amount of tension.
It was
parts of the contest.
It is. I will not spoil who wins this contest, but I will 100% say it comes down right to the last game. It is a competitive game all the way until the very end. So it's extremely cool. Nick and Tekking both put so much on the table of really impressive with their Bleach knowledge. We do the Family Feud game, which was what I've been kind of asking for people's surveys on. So you get to kind of hear the results of that, which has a lot of very surprising kind of answers to a few of the questions that we posed out there. So it's definitely worth your time. I highly enjoy it. I think we're going to hopefully maybe do more in the future. But it was definitely a very successful episode and no small part to Nick and Tekking. So check it out, guys.
That is going to do it. So let's recap. Not finish. Not recap. Let's finish the recap by naming our MVPs and our series of the week for the week of the 24th.
Yes. My chapter of the week this week went to Food Wars. I thought Food Wars was really exciting. It revitalized my enjoyment of that series. It was, like, it just perfectly hit in that exciting way to, like, completely get me invested once again. It was a fantastic chapter for that.
I almost went with Food Wars, but I ended up going with World Trigger. Just in terms of the series that entertained me the most this week, it had to be that. Because, like I said, there was great action, there was some really funny moments in it that I think the first time I saw them actually made me laugh out loud. Love Nikoma Squad. It's not a particularly exceptional chapter, and it's not as big a deal as Food Wars, I'll admit. But I did make my MVP of the week Hayama, so I think that makes up for it.
He is my MVP as well. Hayama completely stole the show for me. There were other people I considered. Luffy was a good one. Yuma, Ikoma. A lot of options out there, but I went with Hayama. But surprisingly, the fan series of the week was The Promised Neverland.
I think people really liked that reveal.
People really liked it. They dug it. It won out in big fashion over everything else too. It was
wasn't like almost 25% of the vote. There was a 3-way tie for second place, actually, between Food Wars, My Hero Academia, and One Piece. I think is a big mark in Food Wars' favor, because that doesn't usually tend to do as well in the poll.
I think what I'm going to start doing, because I'm now noting this part in the time code as well, so you can just skip to this if you want to hear it. What I'm going to start doing, because I know there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast that can't listen to it live. What I'm going to try to start doing is on Monday, I'm going to try to put the poll up on the stream. So hitbox.tv/royalty, try to have it up Monday night. And if you want to participate in the poll, you can vote for that chapter immediately then. I'm going to just going to keep the poll up all the way through when we record on Wednesdays. That way, if you want to, you know, kind of voice your vote, essentially, you can do so by going to hitbox.tv/royalty whenever it's convenient for you in those 2 days before it, and just cast your vote then. Someone may need to remind me on Twitter if you don't see it up on Monday night or something like that. It'll be something new I kind of have to add to my schedule, but I'll try to do that just so that everybody kind of has a chance to voice their thought on it, because otherwise I think we may only get a small select number of people who are actually viewing. So just try to get everybody a voice.
So let's cap things off. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here for Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show live, as Chris noted, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. And if you don't watch it live, you can watch it on YouTube. You can listen to it on Podbean. Check us out on those. Also, check us out on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe, leave a comment, leave a rating.
We got a review. Thank you to the great Rapsode. Rhapsody, perhaps. The series includes a great blend of comedy gold, in-depth analysis, and bizarre pop cultural references. Thank you very much, great Rhapsody. It's greatly appreciated. It's only by reviews like this that we can continue to slowly climb the ranks and overtake the woodworkers. I need you guys, though, to be my Brutus. I need you to stick the metaphorical shank right in the back of the woodworking podcasts so that I can overtake and climb over those woodworking podcast corpses and become the new podcasting emperor of Rome or Greece, wherever. I forget a lot of history. Just stab the shit out of these guys, metaphorically, by reviewing us. I hope you guys grasp what I'm trying to say here. Don't murder.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter for updates on the condition of the show. He's at RoloT, I'm at Y Roller of Time, and we are at WMR Podcast. Chris tends to post maybe a little preview of the chapter when they come out on Monday, if you want to try checking those out. Mm-hmm. Also, of course, be sure to send us an email if you got, you know, just a general criticism of the show you want to share, suggestions for what you want us to do, questions you want us to ask, suggestions for manga we should review, or movies we should do commentaries on, all that stuff. Best ways to send them all is to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com.
I want to specifically note our Patreon. So once again, the bonus podcast for the Bleach Trivia Contest is up, and I think due in part of that, we got a lot of new patrons. So I want to real quick just take a moment here to thank these people. Thank you to Christopher Bonebreak, Philip Pham, John F.D. Lebrano, Jacob Titus. I'm going to fuck up your name, dude, but I apologize. Jonathan Habtemichael? I don't know how to pronounce the V and the T next to each other. I have no clue. I'm so sorry, dude. Jonathan, though. I think I got that. Penn Ryder, Ian Arter, Nick Gammon, Campy, Anthony Carlon, Nicholas Dupree, Sheba, Miranda, Mazatziak? Miranda M. I'm gonna
put
go
it to the Wicked Manga Repat Patreon. Here, Rolo T, butcher your name.
It says that if you pledge at least $1, you can hear me butcher your name on air. So you're getting your money's worth right here. Delson Cox, Feralger, Evan Forsage, Joel Legat, Tyler Van Winkle, and Pedro Garcia Huidebro. Damn it, why couldn't have ended on one of the ones I was good with? Pedro Garcia Huidebro? Nikki speaks Spanish. What's that last name? Wait, bro.
I don't know. Paste it over to me.
It's not going to let me paste it really easily.
Type it.
I can't type it without screwing up the Skype thing. You know how this works.
Damn it. Hang on a second. Hang on.
Anyway, while they're doing this, I want to just give an extreme thank you to everybody who's supported us, everybody who's helping us out. It's only because of you guys that we're able to do very cool things like the Bleach Trivia Contest and a lot of more cool things.
Huidebro.
Huidebro?
Pedro Garcia Huidebro.
Huidebro, okay. I want to note specifically, because I don't know if we brought it up on air yet, yes, we have reached a new goal. The last goal we had up there was, once we reached it, an air gear review would be coming. We have now gone very far past that, and we will have more goals coming up because we do want to continue to build the show. But for the moment, we want to address the air gear thing. Yes, we will be doing an episode of air gear. I did not expect it to come in the middle of Bleach Month, so we're going to have to finish that, and we already set the next recommendation as Pokemon Adventure, so that will be the one after that. However, as soon as we finish Pokemon Adventures, we will get started on air gear. I can promise you that. Hopefully we can get that review in during September, so next month essentially. There's a lot of air gear to read, and I'm going to lose my mind a lot during it. Plus, I'm already kind of subtly pissed at Nick because I have to read Bleach all the way through, then Pokemon Adventures all the way through, then air gear all the way through.
No, you have to read one part of Pokemon all the way through.
Yes, but it's still like 7 volumes of something.
Shut up.
Fuck you. You don't have to read Dick, you already read it.
I have to read air gear?
Yeah, I have to read air gear too!
I also had to read all of Bleach.
Just noting, it was a lot in a row. I have no free time. It's all manga. Anyway,
Chris, someone in the chat is doubting your ability to speak Spanish. ¿Cómo se dice pencil sharpener en español?
Sacapuntas.
Ah, proved you wrong, dude.
Las sacapuntas. Leia. Anyway, guys, it's going to be coming up soon, the Air Gear episode. Everybody's excited for that. I promise you, it will very likely be one of our biggest episodes. It's going to be a monumental episode, if I have anything to say about it. But as said, it's thanks to you guys' support that we're able to do very cool things. Look forward to the future, guys, is all I could say. We got a lot of very cool ideas in the works here, and I think you guys will be really excited to see what comes up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, everyone who has pledged your support on Patreon. Thank you to everyone who just listens to the show.
Everybody's support. Is very vital.
If we didn't do the show for you guys, then we would not have had one of the most fun things I've ever gotten to record. An incredibly great experience that Opponents Pod was. Also, of course, special thanks go out to Infamous Planet, who created the frame around us, and Steve Man for the stellar masterpiece of artwork.
Well, here's the thing.
For our title card this week.
There are, he originally drew two, so I'm going to take this one down real quick. He originally drew, not that one. He originally drew, where is it? There it is. He originally drew this one, which is like a Rukia pinup one, essentially, which is much more to his style. But then he read the last chapter, and he's like, this pisses me off, so I drew this one to cover my thoughts.
Ichiruki all the way!
He's like, it took me 11 minutes to do this. Well, I love that title card so much.
That really does just sum it up, doesn't it? Even if, like, you don't, like, agree with it, it's just like, nah, that would have probably been a better ending, because Jesus Christ.
I do want to specifically note a thank you to Infamous Planet, who specifically made this Bleach-related border. This is a new one he created. Yeah, it's all Bleach images. It's completely devoted to this, so
Because you're noting having to get the size of the frames right, but yeah, cool.
Yeah, I've transitioned us over, so you guys will remember we have a special one for when Annalise was on the show. We have a special frame now for whenever we have guests, and this is going to be like the base one, but he made a new Bleach one. And I didn't ask him to. I was just mentioning, like, yeah, Bleach is ending. He's like, I made a new one for you there, boss. He's like, I didn't have to do that. And he's like, oh boy, crack, yeah, I did, but I loved it, I does.
Hey,
now I've got some chimneys to sweep.
Hey, there can only be one final chapter of Bleach. Might as well go out and saw, right?
Yes.
All right, guys. That is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Bleach is dead and never coming back. We'll see you next time here on Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you so much, everybody.
With Tekken.
Yeah, we're going to be here with Tekken, talking about Bleach, the series as a whole. It is definitely not going to be an hour-long discussion.